You've gone after so many of our guests. There have been some people that have called you out.
Yeah.
How you are friends with some scammers.
Yeah. I'm like the guy trying to expose the bad guys. Why? We're on the same team here. What has the world come to?
Yeah, this is what?
So I've spent $335,000 on legal bills. I got sued from a video I made and I ended up confronting him in person. So I pulled up to him in LA and I had it all on camera. I think right now we're in a certain economic cycle where the meta of viewing behavior is naturally a little negative. Once you have the feeling like everyone's trying it, you're already too late.
I actually want to talk about the Nuck video. I asked you to come on. And you're like, hey, I got a video coming out.
They love the brand. They really believe in them. Mm-hmm. And so now they're going to be suing them.
Welcome back to the MBH podcast, Money Buys Happiness. Guys, before we get into it, you know what to do. I look at our analytics and it's like so many people watch the channel. I want to say over 50% that aren't subscribed. Doesn't that make you sad?
It's embarrassing.
Oh, okay.
It's actually embarrassing. If you're watching this right now and you're not subscribed, come on. Like, what are we doing here?
That's number one. If you're listening, five stars. Spotify, you guys know what to do. Like the video, leave a comment. You guys have been commenting like throughout the video, which has been cool. Do that. Leave some comments for Spencer. He is active. I just gave away the guest name. I wasn't supposed to do that, but just go at it.
I mean, if they clicked it, they know the guest.
Yeah, true.
Right?
Facts. Yeah, true.
All right. We got an internet personality known for his YouTube channel, okay? Where the theme of the channel is to uncover truths that the world may struggle to notice. This involves deep dives into the scammy world of online marketing, analyzing the personal finances of athletes and musicians, and telling stories that he finds entertaining. Spencer, what's going on?
Thanks so much for having me. Guys, it's just one little click of a button. You just got to hit subscribe.
It's so easy.
Hold on. How do you get your people to subscribe?
I actually never tell them to.
All right.
Never mind. Don't do anything yourself.
Well, the entire time I saw YouTube as, it was very important to build an organic audience, mm-hmm. which I think you guys have as well. Mm-hmm. But I never wanted to be the guy, because if I'm assuming you guys have been on YouTube as fans for a while, but definitely as a consumer, you probably remember the era of like 2015. The first 30 seconds was like and subscribe of every video, and then you'd build up a lot of subscribers who may not be watching. So I always wanted to make sure that if people subscribed, they were doing so because I provided content.
It was genuine.
Yeah. So and then I would grow a little slower, but I knew that my watch time and my viewers were coming to really watch me.
Yeah.
And I think that helped me grow quite a bit.
Yeah, you could tell, like, for just from looking at your page, like, it seems very organic, which is we can get into later because we know a lot of
just
people.
Just over 500,000 subs right now, which is crazy.
Yeah, organic, I appreciate it. Yeah.
Without ever saying subscribe.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it speaks to the content. Yeah, don't get into us, please. It speaks to the content, obviously, but, and that's kind of where we want to start with this thing. I think it's funny when we try to, like, when we're thinking of, like, the best way to, like, explain what you do and the content you create, we're like, he's like a YouTube investigator. Would you say that's
I appreciate it. I think Cavizilla is the top dog with that.
Yes.
I enjoy the investigating side. However, I don't love the investigating side. Ironically enough, I'm a storyteller. I love stories.
Yes.
And that's why I hope the audience doesn't ever feel like I have vitriol towards the subjects, because I see them more as stories. And let me share my perspective on what I've uncovered. I certainly love the investigative side whenever you get those stories, as I'm sure we'll discuss. Mm-hmm. However, I don't find a lot of enjoyment out of digging into people, because when someone says, hey, you know, check out this influencer, it's kind of a weird feeling where you're looking for fraud, which I don't enjoy that aspect. Like, if you present a lawsuit to me, or, hey, I'm a victim of this scheme and they have all the facts, great. I love that. But, I mean, imagine a world where you spend all your time, you know, people sending you messages about look into this person. Your whole life is digging into people. I don't find that to be enjoyable.
I think CoffeeZilla enjoys that part more.
He does very much so. He loves it. He loves it. And that's why I think he crushes and why he is as successful as he is.
Yeah. I think it's a very interesting, realm of content, and we can get into that side of it, but I'm curious how you even decided to step into that realm. Cause I know originally you were making like gym content, workout content.
Yeah, man.
Maybe walk us through the whole,
even when you started,
did you guys follow the pickup content back in the day? They're like talking to girls and like getting their number through Justin Bieber pickup lines or whatever.
Yes.
So if we go back to that time, I was deep into that little community of like trying to get better at talking to girls.
Okay.
And so this was when Simple Pickup was blowing up, whatever. Funny enough, whatever now does the dating content, but they do the interviews.
Yes.
They were doing kind of similar stuff. And so at that time I was like, man, I'm talking to girls at bars and nightclubs. If I could just do it during the day, I could do what they're doing.
Hell yeah.
And so at the time, it was not the right time in my life. This was 2012, 2013.
Okay.
I used my last dollars. I was making $500 a month interning for the Birmingham Barons, which is the AA minor league baseball team.
Okay.
And I bought a Sony camcorder at this time. These are, I mean, you look back and like, oh my gosh, Spencer, how old are you? This thing looks 30 years old. And so I bought that camcorder, but unfortunately I didn't have someone to film, which you kind of need a two-part team here.
Yeah.
So I wanted to be a YouTuber back all the way back then. And then in 2015, when I was in Oakland, I realized that my career in sales was not something I wanted to be doing long term. And I also kind of saw the writing on the wall. Mm. Luckily with sales, you have kind of your position in the ranking on the wall, on the sales wall.
Literally.
And when you're at the bottom, like I was, you go, okay, maybe, maybe time for a new career. Yeah. So this was also a time, an era when fitness was blowing up. Mm-hmm. And I loved fitness and I would watch some guys on YouTube and I wanted to do something similar. So that's how it began, January 2015.
Okay. And how long were you creating that content before you kind of made the switch? Was there anything between the fitness content and the investigative storytelling content?
Yeah, I started doing fitness maybe for 2 or 3 months. And I was filming in the gym, which, go back to 2015, this was like no one was doing that. Well, you took a camera to the gym? Like, who are you? And trying to tell your parents? I had, my dad came out and visited me in Vegas and I had some light, the light set up in my room. My dad walked in like, what the hell's going on in here, son? Because it was new. Like, you filmed yourself and put it on the internet. It was such a bizarre thing. And so I did that for a little bit, but it became very clear that I did not have what it took at the time to become a fitness influencer.
Okay.
But I did find a need for this coding bootcamp that I was doing. No one was talking about coding bootcamps.
What's that?
On Sony, and so these are 12-week bootcamps where you, it's full-time, and you go to a class and learn how to code, computer program.
Okay, cool. Okay.
And so I did a career change around that time. And I realized I can make videos about my experience because no one else was. And I was getting 800 to 1,000 views, which at the time for me was like, whoa, this is big. Yeah. And so people reaching out, thanks for making these videos. And I finally, whoa, I'm kind of a YouTuber now. So I did that for a little bit until my course was done. And then I started making videos sparsely, very sparsely on personal finance and real estate because I was looking to get into real estate. But I didn't have that much content. This wasn't like a 3-time-a-week thing. It was, I don't know, I can't remember the regularity, maybe once a month.
Yeah, sure. So you went from sales to the gym stuff.
Yeah.
To the coding.
Yeah. Yeah. I did a career change because I still need to make money. YouTube obviously wasn't making any money. And then I started a second channel. I wanted to be an online personal trainer because I feel like I'm like one of the few people in the world who understands weight loss and how people actually lose weight. And so I wanted to do that path. It just didn't work out. Mm-hmm. I've heard one of you guys talk on, or I think both of you guys mentioned in your videos, like, we've done this, we've done that, we've done that. And people see this and think we're all of a sudden successful. It's like, man, we earned this.
Yeah.
I was kind of similar. I related to that really well because I had many different things that I tried and it didn't work out. Yep. This was over years.
Was all that content living on your same channel today?
No, it was a second channel that I've since deleted. Okay. So you wouldn't be able to find it. But it was cool. I made stories at the time. Here's a funny story. So Ty Lopez now is like this big internet personality. At the time he had 3,000 subscribers on YouTube. And I was following him because he was doing this book a day type content where he'd read a chapter in a book and give a little evaluation of it. And so I started making similar content where I made a whole story around one book a day. But I turned it, I took it to the next level, not just gave some insights, but I tried to tell a story about it.
Okay.
And that content just didn't take off in any way.
And then the investigative stuff, that began, what, 2020, you'd say?
Yeah, and December 3rd, 2019 is, I think, the first video. I had this idea for a series called Authentic or Charlatan, where I felt like a lot of people were becoming these internet personalities and internet marketers, business experts, how to become a millionaire. These were becoming more popular through YouTube ads. And I just wanted to be an objective viewpoint on, are these guys legit or not? No intentions at all. Because at this time, I had no platform. It's just, you're starting something new. I don't know. Maybe there's something here. Maybe there's something isn't. I was certainly influenced by CoffeeZilla. He had a series called Fake Guru Friday at the time. And that was the first time I'd heard the term fake guru. And it inspired me because like I feel the same way.
Yeah.
And so that led to kind of
here we
are.
You feel the same way?
Meaning when he would talk about someone as a fake guru, I felt like they were a fake guru because I never heard that term before. So I finally put a term to the feeling.
True. And before that, when you were reinventing yourself the 3, 4, 5 times, for anyone watching that's trying to build a channel, when did you know it wasn't working?
Pretty quickly.
Yeah. how long would you give it until you're like, you know what, this is not working?
Yeah, I mean, 3 to 6 months. And it's a totally different answer today. I think on YouTube, if you aren't getting views within 10 videos, you're not doing something right. Really? Podcasting, totally different. That's a long-term play.
Okay. Yeah.
But if you want to start doing fitness or something, within 10 videos, you should know.
You should know.
You either have it or you don't.
True.
It's so algorithm-based.
Okay, so you get into the investigative stuff. And I guess at the same time, there was real estate involved too.
Correct, yeah. Because at the time, I was investing in real estate on my own outside of my job.
Nice.
And I felt like there was a lot of shows and content that was missing the actual details. I'd started flipping houses and I felt like some of these shows talking about how to flip houses, they were just missing a lot of details.
Yeah.
And I was a part of a meetup here in Las Vegas And I would get the sense that some people were signing up for these programs. It was $30,000 or $40,000. And they're coming to my meetup, and I know more about real estate than them. Wow. And I haven't paid a dollar to anything. So what's going on here? So I had that mentality of, without using a better word, like expose kind of, but just sharing my beliefs on why some of these programs were bad and not useful to the real estate community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that's where it all started. So it was like a firecracker. It's like right at this moment, I felt like there was some stuff happening in the real estate space that was unethical. And I find CoffeeZilla, and I start looking at these internet marketers. So it all kind of worked out at once.
And you said you flipped a house at what age?
That would have been 2018, so I was 28 years old.
Nice.
Yeah, I flipped two houses in Cincinnati, Ohio.
Okay, so I guess then you were making money off that and then supporting your YouTube.
Well, ironically, I actually lost a bunch of money. So I was working a full-time job. I was making $45,000 a year, working in software development in a suburb out here in Las Vegas. And so I started flipping houses. I had those two houses. I had a rental here. And then I bought another rental, a fourplex, here in Las Vegas. And so I was pursuing the real estate path, and I thought very quickly I was going to be successful. Unfortunately, the flips going wrong kind of derailed my path.
Okay. And so at that same time, you're saying, hey, you still want to keep going with YouTube. You think there's something there.
Absolutely. I was so broke that I couldn't do anything else.
Okay, fair. How about like even... At that age, I guess, how about like the support from your family and the people around you? What were they
saying? My dad said, don't do it.
Seeing you try so many things, right?
My dad said,
what's this guy really want to do?
Like, I know, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was a part of the real estate community. I was actually doing deals, so there wasn't anything. I wasn't successful necessarily, but you could sense that I was doing deals. And in that community, if you're putting the effort in.
You're putting the work in.
They could see it. And you could sit there talking about the deals, and unfortunately, it went awry. However, it was still good deals. It was just when you hire a bad contractor, you can...
Yeah,
it really gets screwed.
Yeah. So I want to talk about the YouTube now. You said December 19th, dropped the first sort of investigative video. How quickly does it pick up?
So you're a creator and you've decided to step into the wonderful world of OnlyFans. Listen, good luck to you. However, we know it's not always rainbows and sunshine, all right? When you step into that kind of industry, that kind of world, you want to get involved there, you got to make sure your back is covered legally. There are a lot of slimy people in the industry. Got to make sure you're checked out and all the boxes are checked correctly.
Enter OnlyFirm. These guys are the real deal when it comes to legal support for OnlyFans models. Picture this, an experienced team of individuals who know the industry like the back of their hand. We got the three C's, all right? Content protection, they got you covered. Contracts, they got you covered. Copyright registration, they got you covered.
And here's the kicker, okay? They're not just some cookie cutter law firm. They pretend they know what they're doing, this and that. No, they understand all the unique challenges as an OnlyFans creator. So leave the legal headaches behind, okay? With OnlyFirm on your team, get back to doing what you do best, creating content for your fans, make sure they keep coming back, and they'll take care of everything on the legal side.
So do yourself a favor, check out their Instagram page at the OnlyFans Lawyer and shoot them a DM with any questions. You'll thank me later.
And for any more information on their services, check out www.onlyfirm.com. All right, let's get back to this episode.
It was obvious on the first video. I did it on Dan Lok, who at the time was very popular.
Okay.
He was at kind of the peak of his clout,
sure,
if you will. He was running a lot of ads too. So I think a lot of people were starting to see his ads. And I'm like, oh, I don't know about this guy. So I made a video and I don't remember the exact view counts, but I'm getting 200 views a video, and then that one gets 1,000 in the first day. And it's like, okay, there's something here. And then the second video, I think, was on Kiyosaki, who had done some things that I didn't care for. And then maybe there was a Tai Lopez episode. And it was pretty clear, like, okay, I'm onto something. Mm-hmm. But I didn't really double down on that just yet because I don't necessarily love that content. I never have, the kind of expose and investigative journalistic side. I still wanted to talk about why athletes went broke and all that. Mm-hmm. So that was in 2020. I made some content that was away from that, but I've kind of like slowly... box myself in here.
Yeah, because I think when I look at your page, I think and correct me if I'm wrong, the content that does the best is the sort of exposing content.
Of course.
I think people are really hungry for it, just because I feel like there is so much bullshit on the internet.
True.
So when there's someone who comes with obviously some facts, some opinion as well, you know, people are hungry for that, especially when it's not, you know, fucking Fox or CNN, you know, spewing you bullshit.
I think we're also on a different scale of like the economic distribution curve. So you know the economic distribution curve, they have like the normal distribution, whatever. I talk with Andre Jick about this all the time, about how we think like the meta of YouTube depends on where we are in the economic cycle. And so I think right now we're in a certain economic cycle where the meta of viewing behavior is naturally a little negative. Mm-hmm. And so I think the content that is the exposed will actually play better in this era versus actually when the economy is exploding, there'll be the Grant Cardones and Ty Lopez's will actually make more money because people are more aspirational. Money was a little cheaper, lower interest rates many years ago, yeah. in 2020 or so, when money's being distributed. People feel like they can listen to someone online and aspire to be like them. But then when the economy crashes or there's interest rates rise, inflation kicks in, people start to feel. And obviously, this is not on an individual level. I'm not looking at every single person like that. Yeah, but there's just like an overwhelming, if you look at the large scale of YouTube, we're talking millions, tens, hundreds of millions of viewers, the viewing behavior. And that's why I think FTX changed everything. Like after FTX, I saw the viewing behavior change quite a bit.
True.
A lot of negativity after that moment.
So you think that's why the content's hitting so well?
Not for me specifically. I'm just saying like in this economic cycle, I think there is a lot of truth to like people's viewing habits will change. And what he refers to it, I've heard this, a few people speak about this. It's kind of like, what are you feeding the beast? What are you feeding the monster? And right now negativity works.
Sure.
You could argue it always works, but I think it works more so now.
See it with some of our content. If we add a negative connotation to a title or a reel or a short or this guy went to jail or this guy got shot, it's always something bad where it's like, oh, we're getting the most views from it.
Yeah, 100%.
Right? But I agree with that cycle. I think we're in the same cycle.
But do you think your content is negative? Like, do you think people would view your content how do you view your content?
I think there's a negative tint. I try to always stay away from the explosive, like personal attacks where it's like, this guy's a scumbag. You'll never hear me say that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So I do think there's always going to be a negative tint where there's an expose.
True.
An uncovering. This guy should be punished in some way. Yeah. Like that's not really positive. You're not sitting down with your mom like, hey, let's turn on the TMZ tonight. You know, I'm not TMZ, but that's kind of kind of similar. Like I'm going to uncover something that you don't know. And it's negative.
I think people catch a thrill from like watching a downfall of someone as well.
Always.
Obviously. Right. We see that in mainstream as well. So I think that, I think people watch and they're like, I want to see him get this guy.
Even more so if that person's flashy, arrogant.
Yes.
And right now I just think we have a lot of people in society that are struggling financially. Yeah. And when you're on social media, and I know it works, and I don't look at these guys with disdain. I think a lot of them are successful as they claim. And they're talking about owning the new Ferrari and check out, I just bought my third house and all this stuff. And someone's struggling to buy real estate on their own. They can't afford their own home. They're looking at their bank account and going, man, I don't have much money. Inflation's kicking my butt. And then you sit there and you watch an ad from Grant Cardone, flashing money, I can make you rich.
Yeah.
Right? You're going to naturally have that like disdain for the person. And then when you find out that they're a fraud, it's almost
you're relieved.
Like, you're relieved. Like, thank God.
I knew he wasn't doing it the right way.
Oh, he was not. Yeah, exactly. Man, it's not my fault.
So if you can
be the medium that can share that, you become powerful. And I think that's why CoffeeZilla has exploded because he's gone after some really big names. Mm-hmm. And he does so in the right way. He does a lot of research and he presents the material really well. And he's an amazing storyteller. Mm. But he's gone after some of these guys that makes you go, that's right. All these guys are scumbags.
Yep.
But for you, I want to know like why you do it. Is it solely just because, hey, this is fucking slapping on YouTube right now? Like, is for the views, or do you find
some... Gotta get those views, bro.
No, listen, we've sat across people, like, I mean, you could say that really about anything, like girls on OnlyFans, whatever, is the money, the views, stuff like that. And I'm curious, like, why do you do it? Like, why do you go after these guys?
I began as a creator that felt like there was a lot of misinformation. And so I certainly started that way. I feel like I've found my way to that again.
Okay.
During my lawsuit, I certainly was doing it for money because I needed the money to pay my legal bills. And so anything that becomes a job, I think it'd be wrong for me to say, I'm not doing it for money, because we all do it for money. You have to get paid and it's a business. So I will never shy away from that. Like, absolutely. I want to do things that get more views and earn more money. But there are times where I release a video and I feel good about it. Not all my videos. I'll be clear about that. Mm-hmm. Some videos it's like, man, I got a sponsor. I got to fulfill. I think this is an interesting story. I'll do the video.
True.
But, and then there are occasionally the videos where like the Nelk video, I thought was actually, I really enjoyed that one because I felt like I was sharing something. I did not take any personal attacks. I didn't think I uncovered anything that was unethical or I did anything unethical. I didn't feel like I crossed a line and I just shared a story.
Yeah.
And it's about a big creator, so I get the views. So I felt like that was an example of one where I felt like it was more than just making money. Like I enjoyed making that video.
Yeah, I honestly, I could personally understand where you're coming from. There's some episodes that we did for views, more in our Full Send Nelk days. that you just don't really feel fulfilled after the conversation. And then there's ones where we leave and I'm like, fuck, that was amazing. Like, I love that.
Maybe so, you got a friend out of it, a personal connection, yes, or whatever.
So yeah. I totally understand that part. I actually want to talk about the Nuck video. It's funny, we chatted a little bit before it came out because I had asked you to come on, just for some reference for people watching or listening. I asked you to come on. And you're like, hey, I got a video coming out. You know, it's like whatever.
2 days before.
Yeah, it was like the timing was kind of crazy. But I want to talk about that video specifically just because we have a little bit of an understanding of sort of what happened there, a little bit, not too much, but I thought it was an interesting video. What made you, you know, choose the meta card? Did somebody ask you to do it? Was it somebody who asked you, or did you just say, hey, I see what's going on here?
Someone messaged me on Instagram and just said, hey, you should look in the Nuck meta card. Pure happenstance that it was 2 years later, so it felt appropriate. Like, here's a 2-year update. Yeah. I feel like making a video 2 months after the fact is probably that wouldn't be a fair to them.
Yeah.
Hey, they haven't done anything. That's not fair. But 2 years is a fair timeline. And I happened to make a video at the time sharing that I didn't think it was a good decision to buy the NFT. So I think it was just appropriate within my brand. And then I started looking into it and someone shared me. I had a few people that were able to share screenshots. And then I looked at the MetaCard Instagram page and I started seeing the comments were pretty negative. So I didn't feel like it was just one person. Yeah. I try to stay away from those where one person feels vindicated and you're like, scammer, awful person. But really it's 1 out of 1,000. But I could tell that the sentiment was pretty negative. And I was like, okay, let me look here. Started DMing a lot of those people. Few got back to me and it seemed pretty consistent with what they were saying.
Were people very open to giving you information?
Not really. I reached out to 50. Now, to be fair, maybe most of those didn't see it. But only maybe 8 reached back out. Two of them were just like, I don't have a negative opinion ever. I don't really want to talk about it. Uh-huh. And then a few of the others were like, here's what I know. Here's some links. Check this out. Here's what was said. Here's some communication in the Discord.
Yeah.
Yeah, I asked because, like, obviously they have you want to talk about a cult following, like, Nuck has that. So these people will die for them, right? So that's why I'm curious when you reached out to get that information, were they like, nah, we're not, you know what I mean? Like,
we're not snitching.
Yeah, we're not snitching, you know?
I didn't get that feeling. No, maybe the people who didn't respond, maybe that is the feeling and they didn't share it with me. Mm. They just didn't respond, so hard to say.
Did you get a reaction from Full Send?
Not directly. Okay. I did, I was provided the screenshot of John messaging the group. I thought it was so funny that he responded. One thing, the YouTube guy, he just called me the YouTube guy, which is hilarious because the criticism of him was that he was never active for like a year. Kyle hasn't been there in a year and a half. Yeah. And then within an hour of the video being released, he has this well thought out response of like all these, at this point he said this, really this happened. I thought his answer was fine. It seemed like he was respectful. He didn't disrespect me in it. Mm-hmm. And he did even mention a couple things like, hey, he was actually right about these, which I do appreciate when someone gets criticized and they actually address some of the things. However, some of the points he made were, we actually had 800 people at the Snoop Dogg concert, not 300. Yeah. I'm like, okay, well, that still kind of proves my point.
Yeah.
And it sounds like they're trying. Look, I don't dislike Nuck. I actually like a lot of their content. I think they've crushed it out of someone who's a content creator, I can respect what they've built. I know how incredibly tough it's been. The fact that they've stayed relevant for this long and been able to pivot as many times as they've had and succeeded at each pivot. And then, of course, building Happy Dad. Nothing but respect for what they've built. But I think my video was pretty fair on criticism. I mean, these are kids that gave $2,300 out of their loyalty to you and expectation that something would be delivered. And when you, I mean, 23 million, I've never seen that before.
Yeah.
23 million. And it looks, it's not a complete scam because they've done some things for the holders, but like, let's be real, 23 million invested. You could, as I alluded to in the video, if you invest 23 million in real estate, you could get over $1 million in cash flow every year and never even touch the principal and have an appreciated asset. So like $1 million a year for the holders, they could be throwing events every month.
Yeah, listen, I think the questions you asked were very fair. Like, I think you were super fair in that. You're right, $23 million is a lot of money. So you, like, I'm not a holder. I never got into the NFT space or any of that, but
we did, but it was just
okay. But like, we're buying things for like $5. But like, you know, I'd be kind of questioning like, hey, 23 million, that's a lot of money. Uh-huh. Even, and then I think John made a response and was like, a lot of us held, so it's not actually 23 million. Okay, even if you chop that in half and said it was, you know, $11.5 million, like, what are you doing with $11.5 million? Okay, board jerky, fair.
But now it raises the concern, is this an equity, a security?
Yes.
Which is part of what I brought up at the end, which I think they're in a tough position, which I don't envy. I'm not looking at him as the bad guy because he's going to have to make one decision or the other. Either you don't give equity and another year goes by and maybe you do an event with Snoop Dogg again, or you know, yeah, some washed up rapper again. But that was so funny. One of the guys was like, yeah, that was like a 20-to-1 meat market there. I had to throw that joke in there. Yeah. But either you do that and you do your best to try to give holders, because it's clear that the casinos and full sand branded gyms, I mean, I can go into the logical fallacies of all those, but those aren't going to come to fruition. So you're not going that path.
Yeah.
It seems like they've chosen the path of Board Jerky, but now the idea of it being a security is now a real law concern.
Yeah,
that I think they should be very concerned.
Well, I'm curious. Maybe you let me know why. Like, you know, Logan Paul and his crypto zoo thing. I think it ended up becoming a lawsuit. Correct me if I'm wrong.
It is. Yeah.
So why do you think, you know, the full send meta card hasn't like gotten to that yet? Why? Because I think it was more money.
This is the start. Okay. Yeah. So what we're struggling with now is you need a face. You need someone to be the leader. With a class action lawsuit, you need one person. So I'm in communications with a lawyer right now who's spoken with some of the victims and holders, and he's struggling to find the one, which is a little challenging because a lot of factors at play. One, you have someone needs to be the face. Not everyone wants their name public. Not everyone wants to, I mean, you're overcoming a psychological difficulty of someone basically making it public that they were scammed. Which as a man, sometimes that's not easy.
Yeah, the ego.
You got the ego. Hey, I wasn't scared. I don't want to talk about it. Yeah. And then you're also dealing with people that gave someone $2,300 who they love. They love Nelk. They love the brand. And they really believe in them. Mm-hmm. And so now they're going to be suing them. That's not just saying, hey, to your friend, hey, I don't like these guys anymore. That's now making it public.
Yep.
I'm now suing them.
You become an enemy.
You become an enemy of the people you maybe aspire to be like one day, or you look up to, which all these factors at play make it difficult. But that's the real answer.
So there is something going on right now in terms of like setting up a lawsuit.
Yeah, I think there's a pretty interesting case. With any lawsuit, there's it's not as black and white.
Sure.
You could argue that it's a security. I think they promoted a lot of possibilities with a lot of things that you'll gain access to. That would, you could argue, these are promises that have been unfulfilled.
Yeah. You pulled up a lot of clips.
And Board Jerky is now, the way they promoted it, you could certainly make the argument in court that it was an investment. You will, Kyle used certain wording, you can buy this and it will go up in value. These little things lawyers can argue very strongly is you are buying and it will be worth more. That is an investment. That is a security.
Yes.
Now, do they belong in jail? Of course not. But is this going to be an interesting case if someone comes?
So it's illegal to classify it as a security.
Right, because they are not able to sell securities. They are not licensed.
True.
This is not a security product.
Okay.
I think a lot of NFTs are going to start getting hit because a lot of people were bringing out the idea of investing in it. It wasn't just an image of a picture of a dinosaur or whatever. There is no investment behind that. Yes. But if you start saying, hey, you're going to get access to my real estate, or I'm this businessman who offers these business services, you get discounts on this and that and all this, there's going to be some arguments to be made. Okay. Lawyers make money by, you know, going to court and arguing this. So someone's going to take it on.
Yeah, no, I'm surprised. I mean, and it's not just with the meta card. I'm just like, I'm looking, I'm saying, how many fucking celebrities have profited like heavily off of these NFTs and all? So I'm like, I'm very surprised that there hasn't been more lawsuits, but I guess you're right. Probably some stuff in the back end. Someone needs to be the face of the lawsuit and stuff like that.
If I was Nelk, I wouldn't be concerned that you're going to lose money tomorrow, but I think they're vulnerable.
Sure.
And all it takes is one or two. Look, this is only 2 years. I think there's still some movement with the Board Jerky. We'll let that play out. Give it another year. If we're in the same position, I think you might have more people start saying, or if someone loses their job and all of a sudden their NFT that was $2,300 that they were anticipating being worth more, they can only sell it for $400. Now they can't pay rent. Now you have a different situation.
Yeah.
So can we expect a follow-up video from you?
Possibly, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, I'll keep in touch with those guys.
Have you ever done like a second round on someone?
Yeah, Mickey. He's a good example of that. I generally don't do follow-ups.
Okay.
But yeah, this could warrant one. That'd be a pretty good follow-up a year from now. Even if something good happens, maybe it'd be fair to indicate that.
Have you ever done a video that you ended up deleting because maybe you were wrong about something?
Certainly.
Yeah?
Yeah. I did a video on Floyd Mayweather lawsuit.
Okay.
There were some things I got wrong in that.
Okay.
I was very ignorant to law. I thought every lawsuit was factual. I thought as a responsible adult and someone who was born with morals and ethics and raised that way in a household, you don't lie.
Yes.
Then I realized you can blatantly lie in lawsuits. So I made a video covering a lawsuit that Floyd Mayweather was involved in. I spoke to some of the defendants, including Floyd Mayweather himself. And everything in the lawsuit was wrong.
Oh, you
objectively proven.
You talked to Floyd.
Yeah, I FaceTimed with him.
Okay.
I
mean,
let's not act like I'm friends with the guy. No, of course. He wouldn't remember that.
Yeah.
But I was objectively wrong in a few things in that video. That is something I hold near and dear to my heart. I never want to be wrong. I feel like as a critic, I would consider myself a critical commentator. I feel like if you are going to criticize others, especially when it's unwarranted, these people aren't reaching out to me or, you know, doing anything wrong to me. Yeah. I think if you are wrong about something, I think you should either correct it, which is a little difficult to do on video, or just take down the video.
Yeah.
There's another video, Steve Will Do It, who you guys are familiar with.
Yeah.
I made a video. This was really tough. I did a lot of research into a guy. He was posting about a guy, Kyle Spreads Picks or something.
Yes.
Kyle Cover Spreads.
Yes.
And I, by happenstance, somehow there's a guy with similar logo and same name on Twitter as this guy who is only on Instagram or something. And oh, I just made a video, and it wasn't an accident because I didn't know, but I mentioned another guy in the video. He reached out to me and just said, hey, you got it wrong. I'm actually pretty legit. Here's why. You know, someone at my work found it. And then you start getting to the personal, like my wife found it. And she thinks, she's asking questions now, which I feel bad
sure.
for.
Sure.
If I was wrong and then it's sure. affecting you. So that video was taken down pretty quickly because I didn't feel like it was fair, even though it was really hard to do because I put all the effort in the video.
Mm, of course.
Have you ever felt like, I guess, worried or scared to go after a certain person? Because you're going after big names, right?
Right.
Have you ever been like, you know, a little wary as to like, okay, maybe I won't do this guy?
Never. No. I think ironically, actually, the bigger they are, the more they have to lose.
True.
And the more you can kind of, and look, it's the YouTube game. If they make a video on you, or if they come after you, you then kind of win. I get the Jay-Z line where it's like, don't even respond. I totally understand that, especially when they're bigger than me.
Yeah.
You know, like Nelk had no benefit from making a video on me or, you know, reacting on Instagram or something. Yeah. So I get that. So I'm not worried about that at all.
True.
Certainly never worried about my security. I've never worried about someone showing up to my house. No, because I don't think I ever make videos about, I never uncover a personal scandal. Like so-and-so cheated on his wife.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff
is
where you get the.
It's just business.
It's just business. Hey, you marketed your products in such a way. Or I think your NFT was a security. Like no one's showing up to fight you off that.
True.
At least not yet.
Yeah, I was going to say there could be someone else.
No, found you.
Have you ever got threatened?
Yeah, Mozzie VS. He's one of these sports bettors who claims he wins. Yeah, he called. He didn't really threaten me, but he texted me my address. Oh, he lives here in Vegas. So that was the most uncomfortable I felt, but I never really felt like he'd show up.
Yeah.
Have you ever encountered one of these people in person? I mean, I think Mickey you did.
Mickey was, in person.
But you guys made that. Like.
He reached out to me and made that video. No, I've never. Oh, man, I wish I had a good answer for you. I don't think I've ever ran into someone after making a video.
Could be a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah, but again, I don't really go after people personally in such a way that's really exposing anything. A lot of my content is on news stories. That's also maybe an added point here is that because a lot of my videos utilize news stories, the news has already kind of been broken.
True.
So I'm not necessarily the first one. I'm just kind of reacting to the first one.
Even I want to touch on, because you've spoken about Fresh and Fit a couple times. You've done some videos on them. Which I thought was pretty interesting. We have our opinions, which I won't get into today. If you listen to other
future
podcasts.
Neighbors one day, maybe.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see
big
about
bootays,
that.
Red pill content in the fast
Latina
cars.
Land. Yeah. Latina land.
you had some pretty strong words and opinions for them, which I think a lot of people share. Just the way that they speak. I think you actually said in the video that you actually agree with a lot of the things they say to some extent. It's more about their delivery. Which I want to talk about, but then also then there's the aspect of they got demonetized on YouTube. I'm curious if you think, cause I can't remember in the video if you said you agree with that.
With the way they got demonetized?
Yes.
I'm generally someone who is very against censorship. I'm all for monetization, but at the same time, it's a business and YouTube employs me in a way. We all benefit from YouTube being this behemoth that we just kind of show up and start posting videos and we get a cool life out of it.
Yeah.
And so I will probably lean towards their decision first. Mm-hmm. I think he crossed the line. Look, I have nothing wrong. If you want to be disrespectful to a certain class of people, I see nothing wrong with you still being monetized on YouTube.
Sure.
But if the advertisers are saying no, well, then that's the game we all play.
Yeah. Mm.
And so I see nothing wrong with that. If you were, they specifically have not really been censored, even though people argue they have. I mean, yes, you get a little demonetized, but they're still as big as ever. They still get their content pushed and you can still post to the platform. I think that's a pretty fair middle ground.
Yeah.
To your point about what they say, it was really funny seeing comments about, wow, Spencer, you're such a beta cuck.
Because
you care about how it makes you feel. It's like, listen, buddy, I read psychology books. 93% of communication is nonverbal. True. It's in how you present it, your tonality. So I'm not even presenting something that isn't true. This is like a factual statement. Mm-hmm. How you say things is very important. There was there's a very important video in my life that I watched on YouTube. I hope it's on YouTube. It's I Love You in 7 Different Ways.
Okay.
And this helps you better understand why tonality matters so much. I love you. I love you. I love you. These are like 3 different examples of how you can clearly tell that there's different intentions behind each phrase.
Yes.
So arguing that, you know, oh man, what they or how they say it doesn't matter. No, it absolutely does, because it gives you insight into how they really believe.
Yeah.
I think how they were saying it was more so to get those views.
They're great at it.
Right?
They're great at it.
Because if you're yelling about it, it's the Andrew Tate
exactly
method, right? Where it's like you're listening to Tate and you're like, you know, what he says isn't so far off, but it's the way he's saying it that's upsetting people right away.
Right.
You see the clip of him yelling, screw this, fuck that.
Girls shouldn't be able to drive. It's like, okay, this is
like
ridiculous.
Very like shock value stuff, yes. Right? So I think they're doing something similar. Obviously, like when it comes to their content, I think that, again, even talking about that cycle that we're in, right? We're in a time right now where I feel like a lot of young men, they don't really have too many legitimate figures to look up to, or the right ones aren't being pushed to them, right? So now they find themselves on these YouTube channels like Fresh and Fit, and they're like, yo, you know what? Maybe these guys have a point, right? Because they're not getting too much, let's say, masculine advice at a younger age nowadays, right? What do you think about that?
I love that you brought that up. Because now this is bringing up the point earlier about, like, I really do think macro level trends is more indicative of YouTube success than the micro. Is my video 8 minutes and 30 seconds? Yes. Do I edit in a certain way? And what you brought up is exactly right. I think where men are starting to have more media brought to the mainstream of, guys are getting screwed in divorce.
Yeah.
Guys are getting tired of dating a girl and then her cheating on him, or whatever the mechanics are. And I think that's why their content has exploded. A lot of what they say is actually good and beneficial. Mm-hmm. I'm all for it. I think 80% could be good and 20% could be bad. I disagree with the 20%. Obviously, I'm not going to make a video discussing why I agree with the 80%. You know, it's about here's some things I disagree with.
And you made a good point in the video, which we've made this point a million times, is, you know, when there was this, for the last, let's say, decade, maybe a little bit less, there was this really big push to radical feminism. And really the only way to even the playing field, unfortunately, is you're going to see, you know, this radical red pill content on the other side. So like radical masculinity, I don't know if that's the right word, but that's the only way you get it back to the middle. When it's so far on one side, you, like, unfortunately, things have to go so far the other way to kind of bring balance, which I think it has. Obviously, all this red pill content has, you know, made some crazy guys. Obviously, this old is an incel army, and these guys are loving it. But at the same time, I think any logical person with, you know, half of a brain is kind of like coming into the middle now and saying, yeah, women should be allowed to drive, and they have their rights, and, you know, they're pushing for what they're pushing for. But at the same time, hey, we're men, we have our values as well, and stuff like that. So I think it's kind of actually, unfortunately, it has to be that way, but the radical masculinity stuff, again, don't know if that's the right way to put it, has sort of brought balance to the world, certainly. I would say.
Yeah, certainly. I think the benefit of their content and what they've done well is that I do think they bring a lot of issues to the table where we're actually discussing it, and I'm all for that. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it takes that, the crusader, the guy who's like, screw it up. I have no reputation, no credit. I'm risking everything, and I'm just going to say crazy shit. Like, I'm Jerry Springer, and then you go, oh, okay, well, now we're talking about it.
Yep.
But it's like the awkward cousin who brings about, like, you cheated on mom or something. It's like, okay, you needed someone to bring it up to, like, get the elephant out of the room.
Yeah, true.
so I think they've done a good job with that, which I do appreciate, because I think a lot of these issues are very important for young men. I think the reason why I kind of criticize them is I think they do have a little skewed on the negative influence on young men. I think I was very privileged to come up in an era where the pickup space was new, and this was the self-improvement space. RSD was a big company, Real Social Dynamics.
Yeah.
And what's funny is seeing them back in 2013 to 2016, they were this like little niche community, and if you follow them, you felt like you were kind of a part of a small little group. And now here we are 8 years later, and it's like so on the forefront that this is a lot of people are talking about dating dynamics, all this short form content. Crushes if you're whatever, Michael Sartain, Fresh and Fit, all these guys.
Yep.
Andrew Tate, of course, is the best example.
Yes.
Well, I think just over the past 5-10 years, I think men have felt like they've been devalued, you know?
Very much so.
So now they're looking for their value. And at the same point, it's like, yeah, a lot of people can agree with, let's say, disagree with Fresh and Fit, Andrew Tate, but I always go back to it. It's like, there's a reason they're getting this many views, right? It's like there has to be something there that men are taking and being like, yo, this kind of makes sense to me.
Absolutely.
And even going back to Fresh and Fit, we've had this conversation many times where, you know, we were going to dabble in like doing a live stream, you know, bringing on some women to talk to them. But then we had this conversation where we're like we don't want to be distasteful in that way where we're putting someone down on camera. Like, that's just not us, right? And we're like, we could have got views. I'm sure we could have put three OnlyFans girls in front of us.
Yeah.
And asked them what country we're in. You know, yeah. And then they get the answer wrong. We're like, ha, ha, like, you're an
idiot.
It's
kind of a form of gotcha.
Yes. That's what I'm, and we were never like that. Like, even with our guests on podcasts, like, we're never really trying to look for a gotcha moment. It's more like we've started this podcast to make the guests look good every time. So we're like the complete opposite of them. We get less views, obviously. Right. But that's the game we play, right? But I think that, you know, there is a tasteful way of doing it without disrespecting other people. Like, am I going to agree that guys need to, you know, go out there, go to the gym, make money? Yes, I think that. Am I going to agree with the fact that all women suck? No, I'm not going to agree with that, right? So that's the extreme side of it, which you're saying. Sometimes you need to say that just to capture someone's attention. Be like, wait, what did he just say? Let me listen to the rest, right?
I think, though, in my opinion, when it comes to those guys, the most important thing, and, you know, this is Andrew Tate as well and mm-hmm. all these red pill guys, the most important, I think, point that they've brought to the table is, like, as men, like, we're allowed to have, you know, like, our opinions. Like, we're allowed to like certain things and not like certain things in our
preference,
partner.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're allowed to have our preferences. Like,
where you talked about this on a couple of pods in the past,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, and again, like, I'm not going to be rude or anything, but you can't dislike someone that's 300 pounds. You're forced to just be like, oh, you know what? She's pretty.
Yeah. No, you know? Listen, I'll come out here and say, like, if you're 300 pounds, you're undesirable.
Yeah, to you.
Well, we gotta be honest to the world. Like,
there's some guys I know that they can deal with it. I don't know those kind of guys.
But
I think that what he's saying is that there's been a takeaway of men being allowed to have preference
without getting canceled or fear of retribution.
Correct.
Right? Yes. Where it's like you put all this stuff together, it's just this huge buildup, and then someone like Byron's gonna just start losing his mind.
I do respect the fact that they are willing to say pretty, pretty wild opinions they never back down.
Yeah.
They never show that they like do a little thing, then back down. So I can respect that out of them for sure.
In terms of, okay, let's go back quickly to the monetization, YouTube, the whole thing. Obviously now there's this big push to like Rumble, and Rumble's trying their fucking hardest, which, you know, good for them, trying to bring people onto the platform. Do you think Rumble survives?
I think it will. I think there's always going to be a second channel or a second platform needed for these guys. Look, I don't consume this type of content. It's like, oh man, they're trying to censor everyone. I got to go follow this guy on.
Yeah.
He says the wild stuff, because some of the stuff on Rumble, it's very clearly you use Rumble to say some wild opinions that I don't agree with.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There will always be a need for that and always a market. Sure. My question for them is, I think they're going to ultimately be just like YouTube, where at some point
you face
the music where the advertisers aren't going to advertise here, and you got to run a business and you need to grow. You got to bring talent there, or you got to pay for bigger server space.
Yeah.
It's all a business. There's a reason YouTube operates the way it does. If they can make more money letting, you know, certain behavior happen, of course they would allow it.
Do you think the tide ever turns where now advertisers actually want to be on something like Fresh and Fit?
Oh, that's a great question. Something I never considered.
Right?
Yeah. Certain products. Yeah. Certain products would probably thrive.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't mind advertising on that. If I had some type of consumer good product that was built for men, why would you not want to advertise?
Yeah.
Advertise directly, even. Put it on a sponsor. I don't know if they do sponsors, but
we've always toyed with that, because obviously, again, and like you said earlier, podcasts are like a whole different world. Like, it's different YouTube content. Some slap, some don't, and whatever. It's a long game. But we're always trying to think, like, okay, what type of conversations are bringing the most views? What do really people really want to hear? A lot of the times, we are two very opinionated guys. I'm sure if you've watched some of our episodes, you'd know that, especially our host episodes where it's just us. We get very opinionated. But a lot of those aren't really advertiser friendly. And the truth is, our brand isn't super advertiser friendly, just because we swear a lot. We don't back down. Again, we don't go crazy, maybe like Fresh and Fit and these guys do, but we're still pretty, you know, not advertiser. Like, you know, a bank isn't going to want to advertise with us. Although we're called Money Buys Happiness, if they look at our content, they probably wouldn't want to work with us to a certain extent. So we're always trying to like play around with that idea. Like, will the tide turn though? Will these more mainstream big companies like a bank, like TD or somebody, really want to work with us at some point? Or should we just write them off now and it'll never happen?
We might see a shift in 5 years, maybe not specifically on these channels, but there's a TV right there. I think TV's less viewership on cable TV. Mm-hmm. We're starting to see a lot of people getting upset at this service. They were taking away sports, and then you got to get sports over here. And now it's, course, ultimately leading to five services. You pay 25 each, and it's the same thing as cable. Yeah. Yeah. But I think a lot more people are moving towards YouTube as their prime source. I think YouTube is always a second or third source. Something wasn't on TV, so let me go check and see what has been uploaded on YouTube. I think now people are going to YouTube first. Mm-hmm. And so if you're an advertiser, if you're Coca-Cola or Nike, and you're used to spending, I don't know what their numbers are, $100 million a year on TV, mm-hmm. and you go, well, we're getting half the eyeballs. That's $50 million. Where do we put it? Well, if all the eyeballs are on YouTube, maybe we need to be a little more comfortable with others. So that's going to be interesting. Thing I think we're going to see in advertising over the next 5 to 10 years is, are there just going to be enough advertising dollars that have to find their way on YouTube because that's where the eyeballs are? Okay, we'll put it on Fresh and Fit. We're Nike or you know, whatever brand that is male-centric. Yeah. Maybe these gambling sites that are male-centric and they're okay with maybe the little bit of the risque conversations. Yeah. They have to because they can't do it anywhere else.
At some point you can't be ignored. Right? Like, it's just like, you're just so big, no matter what you're saying, you can't be. It's like Joe Rogan, for example, you know, he got a lot of heat the last 3-4 years for, you know, his guests and what they're talking about, some stuff going against the grain. He still gets a Spotify deal.
Big one.
A fat one.
You can't be ignored sometimes, right? So I think even depending on your size, how big you are, I think advertisers will still work with you. Of course, not Andrew Tate, just because he's like a very unique situation. But I think that, you know, you could still get advertisers if you're very hard to ignore.
I'm curious what your thoughts are on the podcast space as a whole. Because like I said, it's very saturated now. But where do you think it's headed? Because like if you have any sort of audience, like, you know, if you're like Tana Mongeau or whatever, like she just started a podcast, it's obviously going to get views because of how big she is. Are the conversations good? I don't know. I never listened to it. But I can imagine they're probably, and this is me making an assumption, they're probably not the most like fruitful conversations. You're not walking out with like a ton of value. Now maybe the entertainment is more of the focus for that, but do you think podcasts are going to last? Do you think it's going to sort of be something that maybe people start falling off of, or what are your thoughts there? I'm curious.
We'll absolutely have podcasts in the future. It's just the next wave of entertainment. We had radio for a long time. This is just the next stage of radio. Let's say if you guys are Toronto sports specifically, if I want to hear someone's opinion, I like you guys. Okay, I'm going to come to you every single week on a Maple Leafs update or whatever.
Mm. Yeah.
We will certainly have podcasts. I think we're peaking right now on a trend wave because once you have the feeling like everyone's trying it, you're already too late. Yeah. So you guys got in at just the right time. You capture the right audience. You're Toronto-based. You get Nelk. You get the platform. You get at least the first step. Mm-hmm. Now it's on you guys to grow it. But if you're starting a podcast now, it's way too late. I think when something feels like the right time to the general public, you're already 2 years too late.
It's like crypto.
Exactly. Good point. But anything, like you look at any trend, pranks, vlogs, YouTube has these trend waves. And that's why I think the exposed content that I'm in had a trend wave too. We're kind of on the tail end now where you need to make really good content. The subject needs to be valid. Mm-hmm. It needs to be a good quality video to get the views, the same views as you got before, mm-hmm. because the trend just isn't there.
Yeah,
and so when you catch the early wave of the trend, you get all these views and the market's carrying you and you're feeling like, oh my God, I'm this new superstar. But really it's just you caught the market wave right at the right time. So where we're at, I think podcasts are on the tail end, meaning any new entrants now will almost not have success unless you're clouded or you're an A-list celebrity or you just did a season on The Bachelor and you just capture that momentum.
Outside of
those like few examples, your neighbor that's starting up a podcast talking about her dating experience, not going to make it.
I've been
analyzing trends on YouTube just because I love the platform. Mm-hmm. And I've noticed that is the people that crush, that we talked about Nelk earlier, the people that can pivot and consistently succeed, they're always a year or two ahead.
True.
So they pivot a little early. Like Nelk started doing the big videos. They kind of moved away from the pranks, made it maybe 4 minutes of the video. They started hanging out with celebrities and they pivoted a little early. And now that's looking like the right move.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 They did that early.
Yeah. You have to be super consistent. That's the
very
thing.
Much
people
so.
Think it's, well, it's the same thing as your content, right? Mm-hmm. Where we see it a lot too. We see a lot of podcasts start and then stop. You know, and we've been doing it like 3-4 years now, mm-hmm. close to 300 episodes, but we didn't catch any traction until episode 100.
Yeah, at least. Yeah,
and that's a grind to get there.
So a lot of people aren't even willing to put that work in anyways. They just see a podcast start. They're like, yo, I could do that. I could talk with my friend, you know? And then by week 3, they're like, oh, I got to film another podcast, you know? So maybe off that, When did you start making money off YouTube? How long did it take? Because you've been on YouTube, what, maybe 10 years now?
Yeah, coming up on 10. January 2015 was my first upload.
What year did you start to actually monetize?
February 2020. So it took 5 years.
Damn.
Yeah, it took a long time. I wanted to be a big YouTuber for my entire life, like since 2013. I've been consuming YouTube since 08, 09 when I was in high school.
Oh, so. Right at the beginning.
Yeah, like I always wanted to be a YouTuber, and it just things worked out in such a way that it took a little while, but here I am. It took 5 years.
Without any monetization. Yep.
Yeah, and I had AdSense.
Is that your main source of income?
YouTube?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's last year I think I made around $220 gross. Nice. That's gross. I had a lot of expenses. Okay. Uh-huh. AdSense and sponsors.
Okay.
Make up pretty much all of that.
What which one brings you more, AdSense or sponsorship?
Per video base is certainly the sponsors. Okay. I'm about 3,000 on average. Okay. But I get 2,500 here, 3,200 there, 2,700. But let's call it 2,500 to 3,000 for a sponsor. That's about I don't really have a view expectation, but usually it's about 100,000 views. Uh-huh. Satisfies everyone.
Okay.
And then AdSense, I'm about $5.50 per 1,000 views. $5.50 per 1,000 views.
Okay.
So every million views would be 5,500.
Yeah. Oh, damn. Yeah, I got to show you our back end because we don't make a dollar. Yeah, we don't make a dollar.
They shadow banned or something, dude.
Yeah, we make like literally nothing off.
And in terms of sponsorship, when did you start it? Like at what level, how many subs or at what year did you start getting sponsorship in? Because we have a lot of people ask us all the time, like, hey, I have this, I'm looking for sponsors. Hey, I have this show, I'm looking for sponsors. And they're always asking for advice on that.
Got my first deals July 2022. Mm-hmm. So about a year and a half ago.
Okay.
It was Current, the credit debit card.
Mm-hmm.
And I was at 450 subscribers. I never wanted to do sponsors because I just...
You didn't want to sell out.
I hate
like
that's
the audience.
Yeah, but no one cares.
They don't care.
I had this mentality.
You're doing this for a living. You have to pay for the production. You have to pay for your time, all these things, right?
Yeah, well, I started doing sponsors because I had legal bills. Okay. So I've spent $335,000 on legal bills the last 2.5 years. Well, yeah, that's been like...
What's the legal?
I got sued from a video I made in end of 2020.
Oh, shit.
This guy, Derek Moneyberg. He was like a big, go ahead and laugh. Go ahead. I'll give you the, literally every single person I tell that I can see that and they're like, oh, who is it? And then they have this moment of shock of like, wait, what did you just say?
Yeah, I was like, wait a minute. I'm like, what the fuck did you just say to me?
It's his brand name. It's, so go ahead and laugh.
So he was coming after you.
Yeah, I got sued for defamation.
What happened there?
I got sued June of 2021.
Okay.
So it's been going on for over 2.5 years, $335,000 out of pocket. My legal expenses were picking up and I've been burnt out from content since like April 2022 because my legal bills started picking up. I was a one-man team. My AdSense was pretty good. I was making $10,000 or $15,000 a month, but then my legal bills were getting to $5,000, $10,000, $12,000 a month. And so it was just super stressful. Like, wait a second, I'm making all this content, doing pretty well in life, like making good income, but I'm seeing zero of it. And then the legal expenses kind of picked up and I didn't get the sense that there was any finality. Like I didn't know when it was going to end.
Sure.
And so I needed to supplement my income. As I started reducing my upload frequency, my AdSense went down. I was down to like maybe $4,000 or $5,000 a month. And the legal bills were significantly more. So I started doing sponsors summer 2022.
Mm-hmm.
And that was fruitful. I was able to make a good bit of money.
Yeah.
Yeah, mostly. I've made a little more than break even, but $335,000 is pretty significant.
We'll get into the lawsuit in a second. Yeah. But how did you pick the price? Like when they came to you, any of these sponsors, how did you say, yeah, this is what I'm worth? How'd you come up with that number?
I have an agency handling everything.
Cool.
So they come to me, my buddy texts me, this brand for this much in February, this brand for this much in March. What do you think? Mm-hmm. And then I'll do some research, make sure I try to stick to the big brands. That way it's, I don't do anything with something small because there's too much research needed. There's too much trust with fulfillment. If it's a big brand with 10,000 five-star reviews,
the trust there,
you don't really, how much research can I really do into the company?
Yeah.
And it's obviously trusted. It's a good brand and it's a product that I think would fit.
True. Yeah, makes sense.
And they're working with you.
I guess they're taking commission off the deals that they're...
Yeah, 15%.
That's cool. That's creator
agency. 10 to 20% is generally what you'll see. Yeah, they take 15.
That's creator agency, yeah?
Correct, yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah, no, okay, well, let's get into the lawsuit. I'm super curious about it. I know you made some videos. Just walk us through that whole story. Like, what happened there?
Yeah, it was served at the house down the street, June of 2021. It was kind of scary because I didn't know anything about lawsuits. You get presented with a lawsuit, you think you're like, oh my God, am I going to go to jail?
I'm
like,
done.
What happens?
Yeah.
How do I respond? You don't even know if it's obviously serious. And I thought it was just a threat because most of the time I would just get a cease and desist in the email and, okay, I'll take the video down, whatever. Okay. Not worth the headache. But yeah, I was served. And then initially I thought it'd be 30 to 50,000 total. At the time, my income jumped. I was making about 20,000 from AdSense. I do what's called house hacking with real estate, so I buy a house in rent out all the rooms and live for free. So I haven't really paid rent or mortgage in 8 years. Mm-hmm. And so I've always kind of had personal expenses covered. I'm really frugal. So that 30 to 50,000, couple months of AdSense, I'll take the hit. I do this for a living. Let's expect it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Obviously, I was very wrong about that. And lawsuits start slow, too. You don't really have big expenses up front. So I was like, oh, this isn't too bad. But then it's just been a 2.5 year process of hell. I think lawsuits are the biggest scam in the history of the world.
True.
It's just been a very, very, very difficult experience. I'm fully covered financially on all the expenses. So you're meeting me at a much different time in my life. If we met six months ago or a year ago, I was in a very bad mental place for a long time.
Yeah.
Because my experience on YouTube is mostly isolated. I sit in my room and I do research and I film and I edit in my studio, mm-hmm. which is in my bedroom. So I don't really get out much. I don't get to socialize. So this mm-hmm. whole time I was in a panic of I have to succeed just to break even. Mm-hmm. And the bills kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger to the point where I was spending around $15,000 a month just in legal Ooh, bills. Damn. And the hardest part too is when you don't really know the process. I didn't know when it was going to be over. Mm-hmm. And lawyers are not on your side. This is what it took me so long to understand. Yes. This is what it was like such a mind fuck when someone told me, he's like, oh wait, you realize your lawyer's not on your side. I was like, what do you mean? He's like, he gets paid the longer this goes, and then yeah. it's just wow. mind blown.
That changed everything.
Doesn't yeah. mean my lawyer's unethical. I would recommend him to others. I think they've done a great job with motions. It's just the process itself is so burdensome and so long and drawn out that it's so unnecessary. It's hard to convey that. Yes. 335,000, we could have sat in a room for 6 hours. I could have presented all my evidence, made here's the claims on why I didn't commit defamation, why I should not be held liable for the damages. And we're done. We're done, yeah. gentlemen. I'll pay 20 grand and we go our separate way.
Move on, yeah.
It's so stupid.
So what's the goal of Mr. Moneyberg? What's he trying
Certainly
to do?
Certainly to silence criticism.
Okay.
I think I've uncovered a lot of things that he does that I find to be unethical. I also filed a complaint last night with the Attorney General. He committed perjury in our case, which is a Class D felony.
Wow.
Punishable up to a certain amount of time in jail and a fine. I think he should be punished accordingly. And I'm working to proceed with that. I hope he gets punished. I think he's committing, I believe, personal opinion, that him claiming to live in the state of Nevada while he knowingly lives in Chicago, you can do the math yeah. on state income differences. I am of the belief that there is a possibility
uh-huh.
that he is doing so for tax reasons, to save on taxes. And so I've uncovered a lot of this. So I believe yeah. he's doing it to silence criticism. He's someone who's protected his brand and probably knows he's done a lot of unethical things, and he's very wealthy.
Okay.
And this is unfortunately a tactic that the wealthy can use, because as you just heard, yeah. 335,000, not many people can afford that. Like
yeah.
I'm incredibly privileged that I was in a position where I not only could pay that, but then not also go homeless.
Yeah. yeah.
And so he uses it, yeah, utilizing the legal system. So it's called a SLAP lawsuit, essentially. There's a term for it, SLAPP.
Where they're just draining your bank account, pretty
Strategic
much.
Litigation against public participation. So there isn't really a way that he can necessarily drain my bank account. It's just the process itself is long and drawn out. There's been True. A few tactics. We don't need to go into the details, but there's been a few tactics he's implemented yeah. that have drawn this out. He's made it difficult. He's been unethical, him and his attorneys, in their behavior during depositions. And so there were ways to kind of drain or, you know, extend it unnecessarily.
Did yeah. you ever have to sit in front of him?
Yeah. I showed up to a deposition.
Okay.
Yeah, it was really interesting. So deposition is where you sit there in front of the camera and give yeah. your testimony under oath.
Yes.
And so he pulled me into the side room and we chatted, and he looked very upset. Why'd you make a video on me and all this stuff? And
yeah.
he was very upset, very intimidating. He's a very kind of bigger gentleman. Uh-huh. One of the 300, he's not quite 300 pounds, but maybe one of those, you know, yeah. if you find a girl that's into bigger men. if you find a girl on the podcast, it's like, I have a preference for bigger men.
Oh, yeah,
I got the guy for you. Yeah, he used intimidation tactics for sure on me
yeah.
to threaten me to take down the videos that I had released following the lawsuit of the stuff I had uncovered.
Yeah.
And anyway, we sat in the deposition room. It was very, very fascinating. I had to see a guy across the room that's basically ruining my life.
Yeah.
And someone that I very much despise in many ways.
Was it ever an option for you to just delete the videos?
No. See, this is what sucks, man. This is why civil litigation is extortion. Okay. So here's why.
True.
I was presented with a lawsuit. It's $2 million. If you don't play ball, meaning if you don't answer, you just say, screw you, I'm not even responding, you get an automatic judgment. I have assets and a judgment is against me. I'm sued personally. Mm-hmm. And so I would face a $2 million judgment.
Wow.
That doesn't go away. So, okay, that's not an option. Oh, option B, let me call an attorney and it's going to cost you $335,000. Yeah. Where's option C? Yeah. There isn't one.
Well, so
there
he didn't even give you the option of just deleting the
videos.
This
is what's so stupid. He's such an idiot. He could have reached out at the time and just said, hey man, I believe that some things were defamatory in your video. Do you mind taking them down, or do you mind interviewing me where we could clear the air or something?
True.
If he said that, I just would have taken the video down.
Yeah. Yeah.
But instead he sued and had the Barbara Streisand effect where I said, oh, well, since you sued, now let me look into this.
Yeah.
I've made videos that have a collective maybe 1.5 million views where the original videos maybe had 30,000 collective views. So it's now got exploded in attention to his unethical business practices.
Yes.
And there's still a chance that I recoup my money. So
good.
Fingers crossed. This is a clear cut example of a slap lawsuit. We filed an anti-slap motion. Thankfully here in Nevada, they have a special motion to dismiss for anti-slap, which if granted by the judge, I will recoup all attorney's fees.
From him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's got the assets. I know where he lives. I know all of his assets. And so,
Man, you see, like this is why this whole conversation we've been having, this is going to be kind of like a little bit off topic, but is the reason why we never launched an NFT is we never like did a paid community. Cause we were like, it feels scammy. And when something feels scammy, just stay away from it.
Well, we're just like, we're going to sell an NFT. And then what do they get?
Yeah.
Right? And we're just like, bro, like we're so busy all the time. We can't promise them anything crazy. And we're very picky with what we sell our audience. Right. Like the most we sell them is fucking
T-shirts.
Yeah. And a T-shirt, right? Just something tangible that you can have. Mm-hmm.
Then I'm scared of guys like you. Because then we were like, okay, we literally sat. I'm telling you, for months we sat and like, we should launch an NFT.
And so maybe many people coming to us, hey, like we'll be your partner on this. You don't have to do nothing. Just promote it. Right.
But then we would have had you making a fucking video about
it. I was watching CoffeeZilla, like,
you know,
I'm not trying to be on the next hip piece. You know what I mean?
No, that's crazy. I mean, hey man, I hope it works out for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it should. I mean,
is there a timeline on it, or you have no idea?
We're in appeals court right now. So he appealed the motion for summary judgment, which is essentially the end of the lawsuit where I was granted the victory essentially on all claims.
Okay.
And he's able to appeal that. In addition, we were able to appeal the anti-slap. The judge, we believe, ruled incorrectly on the anti-slap. He did not grant it. We believe very strongly that this is an anti-slap case. We are very confident that in we can file appeal. And we are confident that we're going to win that ruling. And we do not have a timeline. The courts just go on their own.
Yeah.
Their own timeline. Another good aspect of this, we're able to file a motion for fees. So in addition to that anti-slap, we can file a motion for fees, making our claim on why I deserve my attorney's fees outside of the anti-slap.
Mm. Okay.
And so that we don't have a percentage on likelihood of that.
Is there any way that you can, and again, I don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
That you can file for damages and actually make money off this case?
No, if I'm awarded the anti-slap and I recoup, it would then be very hard to say you're damaged because you recoup. And also with lawsuits, dude, it becomes expensive.
Yeah.
No lawyer on the plaintiff side will take you on unless you do. Yeah, it's just so ridiculous.
So when things like this happen and you said you were in a dark place too mentally and stuff like that, did it make you ever want to stop doing these videos?
Yeah, I've wanted to stop for 2 years. Dude, the crazy thing is in March 2022, I started a new folder of all new ideas, video ideas. I wanted to do spectacle content in YouTube space. Spectacle is where the idea is really grandiose.
Yeah.
I wanted to invest every dollar back into YouTube. And so I wanted to make different content 2 years ago.
Yeah. True.
And so, yeah, I mean, there's different
arguments. Well, then you keep doing it to pay the legal bill.
Right, like so said. Here I am 2 years later. It's like, all right, well, I got the platform and I make pretty good money.
Well, okay, well, let's say the lawsuit settles and you recoup your money.
Yeah, so that's a fat savings account you're getting back.
Is that a moment for you to now pivot, maybe?
I'm building a team right now to help offload a lot of the main channel. I call it my main channel, my current YouTube channel. I'm going to have others work on it. That'd be finding video topics, doing the research, and editing.
Nice.
I don't mind writing scripts or presenting, because I do think at the end of the day, I am doing a good thing. I think a lot of the stories I make are highlighting some unethical business practices. Mm-hmm. So I don't feel wrong in what I'm doing. It's just all the research and communications, all that I want to offload to someone else. And then I have a second channel that I'm going to start filming for here shortly. I've released 3 videos on it, collectively 25,000 views or so. So there's a little traction, 800 subscribers.
But
or
you
something.
Can use the other channel to promo the new channel.
Not at all. I'm keeping them completely separate.
Keep it both separate.
Totally different audiences, totally different content. And once again, back to the beginning, I only want people to subscribe. I want you to find it organically.
True.
So that's why I don't promote it. Yeah. But I'm going to start filming spectacle content here shortly for that channel. I'm in kind of a transition period where I finally am out of the legal expenses. Mm-hmm. and I have good income coming in. I'm probably about $12,000 to $17,000 a month in income from my main channel. My real estate income covers my all my personal expenses. And so now I have the money coming in from my main channel. I'm going to invest in my second channel. Yeah.
And okay, like for someone who's listening or watching and doesn't know what's, like, give us an example of what's spectacle content. Maybe another
creator who does that. It's where the idea is so drastic. So one idea that we have is there was a castle out in Kansas.
Okay.
It's a 20 by 20, so 400 square feet. It was an old diner. I saw it on Instagram, and it's free if you come pick it up. It's on someone's land. Oh my God. So an idea would be, like, I bought the castle for free, and then I want to buy a piece of land, kind of to show my investing knowledge, buy a piece of land in that town in Kansas, move the castle onto my land, and then try to sell it. So like, cool. I bought it for free, and then go through like the finances of it.
Sold it for this. Yeah.
The title of the video would be something like, I bought a castle for free. And you're just like, what the hell? And it legitimately looks like a castle from the exterior. It's not a mansion castle, but it looks enough like a replica castle.
Yeah.
So stuff like that. Okay. We have ideas. I would like to do really catchy home tours. Like I toured the smallest Airbnb in the world. I have ideas. I really want to do what a starter home buys you in a city by city. So what a starter home buys you in Toronto versus Memphis, Tennessee or something. Yep. And then you could branch out into Russia. Like what does a starter home buy you in some country in Africa or Europe or Asia? That's a very expensive video to make, but no one else is making it. Yep. And so it goes back to, we were talking earlier about like where trend waves are. Mm-hmm. If you can get ahead of something where you're the one of one making it, it doesn't guarantee success, but it at least gives you, you're probably going to get some attention. Because like, whoa, I've never seen that before.
Yep. Usually to be that one of one, you have to spend the money. That's why people won't do it.
I'm one of the few creators who has like all these variables working in my favor where I am never hungrier for success as I am now. Because I just went through this very dark period of my life.
Yeah.
I have a main channel that's producing cash flow of in excess of $10,000+. I feel like I'm pretty knowledgeable on the platform. Yeah. I'm single, no kids. I have real estate covering all my expenses.
Yeah.
So like I'm perfect. Run. I feel like right now is the perfect opportunity. I feel like it's a once in a lifetime opportunity. Yeah. And that's why I'm coming to you today. I'm in a much better mood than I have been in a long time. I'm a very optimistic person. And one of the challenges of a lawsuit is, number one, I couldn't invest in anything. Mm-hmm. Yes. So I couldn't invest in content. I couldn't invest in maybe a new style of video, maybe going in person. Because the $1,000 to go somewhere in person, I couldn't justify
that.
You needed
it, yeah.
I literally couldn't afford it. I had max credit cards and a monthly bill that was more than I was making.
Yeah.
And so you also, it really wears on you mentally. It becomes really challenging. We're in a creative space. Even though podcast people may not see that. So you actually have to come up with the questions you need to research.
Of course.
You're thinking on the spot, like, oh, wow, he said this one thing. Let me ask him, how do you feel about that? It's a creative space. If you're not in a good place, if your girlfriend broke up with you or you found out she cheated last night, like you're probably not showing up today in the same mood and the same mentality. And so that was another massive challenge. It really wears on your creativity. When you're exhausted, it's like the epitome of the artist, the really good artist that's trying to make it, or comedian. Mm-hmm. It's like, if I could just have someone bankroll me, I can make it, because they're always stressed about money. So then they got to go work the job and they can't focus on the album.
Yes.
So there's that like balance.
Yeah.
No, you seem like you're in a good place. I think like just based off of what we've seen you create and the ideas you have, as long as you got the fucking money, the execution shouldn't really be an issue.
I'm going to make it happen.
Yeah. I mean, that always seems to be the biggest thing. I quickly want to ask you about something. Obviously, in doing our research and searching you up, there have been some people that have called you out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love this.
There's been some videos, and it touches on creator agency and how you are friends with some scammers, quote unquote, and you never call them out. So maybe speak to that a little bit. I'm curious what... You know, I don't think you've ever made a response video necessarily to these other people that have called you out, but why do you think these guys are calling you out? And you know, based on the things they're saying, again, you're friends with scammers and maybe you're legally... Okay, just let me give some context, actually. So one of the videos I watched, I can't remember the guy's name, not really a big channel. He said, you know, you're a part of Creator Agency, which is, I guess, the guys that get you your sponsorship deals. There are some other guys, other gurus, that are part of that agency that you're friends with. They'll pull up pictures of you with them and whatever. And they'll say, hey, you know, it's funny because, you know, he calls out this guru and this guru and this guru, but doesn't call out the guys under his own agency. So then it starts to become a thing of the guy's questioning. He's saying, hey, maybe it's because they're friends. Or he's saying, I think one of the specifics of the things that he said was that he believes, or he would bet his life savings, that you're legally bound to not being able to call these guys out because they're from the same agency. So I'm curious, like, just what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought it up. That I looking back, I'm very appreciative of that time in my life. My whole perception of media changed entirely after that, when I now am the subject of the videos. Because if someone made a video on you and now you go, well, I know all the facts because it's my life.
Yep.
And so then you realize how easy it is to twist words.
Yeah.
And I realized how much responsibility I have. And so I felt like I became a better creator. And I'm glad for that experience, because then I know what it's like to, I felt what it's like to log into YouTube and someone make a video and you see thousands, you can read the comments. I mean, they're very ugly towards me.
Yeah.
This was also a very dark time in my life. This was November 2022. I remember it vividly, probably PTSD from that time, because my legal expenses were more than I was making. I was in an utter panic. Sponsors weren't there. The FTX thing happened and I had videos made about me, negative comments. Now all of a sudden people are coming at me and I'm like, whoa, what? Yeah. I'm like the guy trying to expose the bad guys. Why? We're on the same team here. Yeah. You're coming at me. I think there's also a big difference between objective truth and optical truth. And I ran into the issue of being objectively accurate with my claims about FTX and my friends, who you allude to.
Yeah.
And optics. At that time, when FTX happened, the optics were very simple. You have YouTubers that make a lot of money, and they're very transparent about that. Graham Stephan being one of them. Meet Kevin's another. Yeah. These guys have made tens of millions of dollars because of YouTube, for the most part, YouTube. And so you see this guy promoting FTX. Their followers supposedly lost a lot of money, and they made a lot of money, and they don't really get harmed. They scam their audience, right? So I totally understand the optics, and I didn't take that into consideration. I probably wasn't as nuanced in my take. But my perspective was very simple. I made a video. It's no longer public, so you probably didn't see it. It got 230,000 views or so. And so it was a very objective look at the situation as a whole. What I very much did not appreciate is the fact that I was the only one who knew all the actors in this space. And I say actors, characters, whatever, subjects, whatever sure. word you want to use. Scammers. I know everyone. I know all their deals. I know how much money they were making. And so the fact that I was the only one and yet I was so disrespected, it really upset me, because I'm like, I'm the only one here who's not incentivized. I had no incentive to make that video. There's no contract about creator's agency. If Graham Stephan scammed someone, I could make a video about that.
Yeah,
if he did. What's really unfortunate about the FTX thing is you had like all of these variables playing at once that just created this like hurricane of attention. It'd be equivalent if like Bernie Madoff went on interviews. Imagine if you guys had Bernie Madoff and you're like, hey, if you're interested in his fund, and everyone validated him, smart people validated him. You didn't see anything wrong with, hey, he's bringing in money for 20 years. And then if Bernie Madoff gets found as a fraudster, it's like now all of a sudden you guys are caught heat. But so anyway, with the FTX thing, you had a very unique situation where the platform itself was not a scam. Like Coinbase isn't a fraud scheme. It becomes a fraud scheme if the CEO takes the money against everyone's knowledge.
Yeah.
Even are the employees now scammers too?
True.
Because there's employees there that were running sales funnels that were promoting FTX and bringing people in. So this is where like all the logic breaks down.
Yeah.
And the reason why I think there needs to be nuance here. None of my friends knew FTX was a scam.
Mm-hmm.
None of them knew. Just like, guess what? The people that gave them $150 million didn't know.
Yeah.
No one knew. If someone knew, they would have made a video sharing all of the bank statements, showing the money movement that Sam Bankman-Fried was extracting money from one source, gambling it on another. Yes. To me, the story was Sam Bankman-Fried,
correct,
not FTX. And so just the way I operate, I'm very objective. I don't get emotional.
Uh-huh.
So in that time frame, there was no emotions from me. It was just, here's the story, here's the objective facts. And ironically, even in the video, I say, you can be mad at my friends. It makes total sense. They promoted it. You can be mad at them, but if you're gonna be mad at them, they're a very small piece of the puzzle. Mm-hmm. We found out through discovery as part of the FTX lawsuit. You guys might have seen Tom Brady. Do you see that?
Tom Brady makes $50 million
in 30 minutes, and people were trying to tell me, Spencer, you're wrong. Graham Stephan has more influence than Tom Brady. I'm like, what has the world come to?
Yeah,
What?
Yeah.
And so all the criticism thrown at me, like I could literally objectively break down why it's false, but that's just not how YouTube works.
Yeah, you took the words out of my mouth. I was going to say, why are people not going after Tom Brady?
And I get it. And here's what really happens.
There's more huge people too. There was all
Shohei Ohtani, Kevin O'Leary.
Kevin O'Leary is huge.
In my video, I think where I went wrong is I very much agreed with almost everything CoffeeZilla said in his video, because CoffeeZilla made a video and it got way more views than mine.
Yes.
And I guess what? I called him. We're friends. I talked to him and just said, hey, I would disagree about a couple things. So in my video, I didn't share all the things I agreed with him. I just pointed out two things that I was like, I actually disagree, and here's the reason why.
Yeah.
But I think CoffeeZilla has such a massive brand that people saw that and thought I was attacking him. Yeah. I was trying to, it's like, no, dude, adults can sit here and talk about 10 different topics and disagree on one of them.
Yes.
And we're still cool. Yeah. We had an adult debate here and we're still cool. Yeah. Just like Coffeezilla, I agree with almost everything, but the Tom Brady thing really upset me because he's like, well, people go on YouTube, they learn from, they're more influenced by Graham Seven. Yes, I agree. And even in my video, I said, you know, you can be mad at him because he probably influenced the people on YouTube, but he has such a minimal impact because I happen to be the one who knows how much they influenced, which is very minimal.
Yeah.
All these people, they made millions. It's like their contracts were cut because they weren't influencing anything.
Yes.
So this idea, so the arguments were like, their followers lost millions. No, they didn't. They lost a minimal amount.
Correct, yeah.
And anyway, it was a very dark time because I didn't feel like I had a fair shake.
Yeah.
You know, people were making videos about me, like I lost all my credibility. And they were making so many fallacies in their arguments that I could objectively prove wrong, but there was nothing I could really do. And the optics looked bad because I was under the same umbrella as Creators Agency.
Yes.
They're just an agency who gets deals.
Yeah.
I've been friends with them before. I was friends with Erica Kohlberg before she started Creators Agency. There's no contract here about like, I joined a scammer agency.
Yeah, well, that was the big piece. But I think, you know, to the whole Tom Brady thing, Graham, like, no offense, I love Graham Stephan. We were actually texting. He's going to come on the show when we get back to LA. We were talking to him. You know, no offense to him, but he has nowhere near the influence that Tom Brady has.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. So it's this weird thing in the world, and I don't really know exactly how to explain it, but it's almost like once you get to a certain level of fame and notoriety, it doesn't matter. Like, you could do anything, say anything, and people have so much love for you that you could promote a scam or you know, whatever, promote this platform that ended up scamming people, not to Tom Brady's knowledge, and he's okay, but God forbid the guy with 500,000 subs on YouTube murder him. Like, it's so weird how that works.
It's
like,
wild, isn't it? Yeah, and even in my video, I brought up the fact that FTX Arena, the Miami Heat Arena, the amount of eyeballs that gets trumps the YouTubers.
Yeah.
And so when people, logically speaking, yes, they are correct that someone doesn't go to the Miami Heat Arena and go to FTX and look for, let me download FTX and use the Miami Heat code. Yes, I get that. But there's a reason why they spend $30 million a year on naming rights.
Yeah.
Because it has influence.
Yes.
The YouTubers made significantly less. I mean, we're talking to fractions. So, and my video wasn't aimed at Coffeezilla in any way. It was aimed at, I saw that there were a lot of people that were making videos about my friends that I felt like were missing so much of the context and details. They were all attacking them. And unfortunately, my friends didn't stand up, because what people don't know is that if some of these guys would have actually made videos defending themselves, it would have wiped away all of the criticism of them. True. But they didn't, because that's not who they are. But
yeah,
whatever.
Fair.
Damn.
Yeah, that was a dark time that it just enraged me that I was like, wait, all of a sudden I'm the subject of the ire. Why are you mad at me?
Yeah.
Like, the problem was, the catch is, it wasn't a scam. Mm-hmm. It was that there was fraud committed.
Yeah.
That's the problem. Mm-hmm. It's if I did no research, if I promoted a health drink and I did absolutely no research and there were lawsuits about the health drink causing cancer, that's on me. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
That's on me. And criticism's fair. But if you promote Gatorade and all of a sudden some rogue employee messes with the formula recalls about vehicles and products and stuff. Like, you can't then call me a scammer. That makes no sense.
Well, that's like even like the owner of the Heat Arena making that deal for
right. What now? Is he now a scammer? Yeah. Come on. Yeah. And it's just so frustrating.
Well, perspective. Because, now that you put it in this light, like, it makes more sense. It was more like you said, the CEO taking all the money, not so much the platform.
Right. It was the platform itself. That's why they were able to raise money, is because the business model itself is not a scam.
Yes.
And this is why I felt like so many people were wrong. Criticize Sam Bankman-Fried. He is the bad actor.
Yeah.
The problem with humans is all it takes is one bad actor to make anything a scam. Yeah, anything could be a fraud.
The whole thing could be a fraud,
but it's not. That's why FTX itself, by its nature, is just a place. It's just a marketplace. You just go and trade crypto.
Which already exists out there. Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah.
There's plenty of platforms that exist.
Yeah, it's like you said, Coinbase. Is Coinbase a scam? No.
The one major criticism that you can throw at them that I felt like was entirely fair is that as channels that promote financial literacy and understanding of finance, staying away from crypto probably would have been the better move.
Yeah.
And that's why if that was the major criticism, I would have been like, hey, I actually agree with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I think if I were to criticize my friends, I think they should have stayed away from crypto And I probably would have told him that
in general,
stay away. I told my, even at the peak of crypto and everyone was making money, I said, do not give me crypto deals. I don't want anything to do with crypto or NFTs.
Yeah.
And which I feel like they should have done that. That's the one criticism I think you could throw at them that would be not only fair, but also accurate.
Which you saying that though is a pretty bold move, because I can only imagine those crypto deals were probably huge bangs.
Well, we know my buddy, Tom Nash, Jeremy Financial Education, they were getting 50K a month. Woo! And I think Meet Kevin was getting 2,500 per. And he was doing 10 a month would be 25,000. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyway, my point is, now we know the numbers. Mm-hmm. These guys weren't influencing anything. So if you're getting paid 50K, which is a lot, let's be real, it's a lot.
Yeah.
But in the grand scheme, Tom Brady getting 50 million, 50K, and you're not even influencing what, like immediately, Tom Nash, who's one of my closest friends on YouTube, immediately they cut his contract. He had a contract and they cut it.
Yeah.
Because they knew, like, oh, he's not influencing anything.
Wow.
Yes. So should they receive some type of punishment or some type of, a video made about them because they promoted it? Sure, that's fair.
Mm-hmm.
But there was no influence. So let's avoid their audience lost millions of dollars. Let's avoid that, everyone.
What do you think of people promoting casinos?
This is a great question, man. Mm-hmm. I've been kind of torn on it because I know you guys have a little bit. I don't mind as long as there's disclaimers. Mm-hmm. I've never minded marketing as long as there's disclaimers, as long as it's not being promoted as, hey guys, you will win. Yeah. There's a high likelihood of winning. Or a reason why I've gone after a lot of the sports bettors is you were buying into them because they give off the belief that you will make money.
Almost guaranteed.
I'm so successful. If you buy my picks, you can have the Ferrari, the cars, and use all the material objects. I don't really see anything wrong with promoting gambling if you do it in such a way, like, I enjoy gambling, this is the casino I use, nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No. Well, I mean, I asked because obviously one of our main sponsors is an online casino. But our content's more just like fun.
And
like,
as long as it's not rigged, I think it would be really, there's an ethical line there, like the Rue bet, I think got brought up in a CoffeeZilla video, where if there's reason to believe there's some stuff, and again, there's only so much as a creator you can figure out. That's another thing about FTX that, like, no one brings up. I know how much research these guys did into FTX.
Mm-hmm.
No one knows that my buddy Tom Nash, some of them, maybe all of them, they had extensive research into, I mean, they talked with people that were legitimate in the industry that vouched for FTX. They were the golden standard of security and stability.
Yeah.
Behind the scenes, this is not public. These are like people, lawyers, people that represent other crypto firms. They're like, no, they're the golden child. That's a safe promotion.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. No one saw that. Yeah. So unfortunately, when I make my video and I defend them, And this is where I was majorly flawed. I wish I would have uncovered this.
Fair.
And I saw that maybe there was more I should have shared, that people would have saw my side a little more.
Yeah.
But like, no one, the major criticism, they didn't do any due diligence. Okay. Mm-hmm. I would always ask people, what due diligence did they do?
Yeah. True.
No one knew. They're like, they didn't do any. Well, I'm like, no, you don't know. Yeah. They actually did a lot. They did way more than I would have expected.
Yeah.
So anyway, I think as long as you guys buy into the product, look, everyone knows the casino. There's probably house rules,
of course,
mantra, and everyone. I think we all agree. Yeah, as long as you don't promote that, hey, buy our picks and you'll win, I think you're okay.
No, definitely don't buy our picks.
We show ourselves losing all the time. Yeah. For us, it's like we actually just enjoy gambling, obviously. And so we're just like, hey, this is who we use, type of thing. It's kind of
we enjoy losing money. I see there's nothing wrong with that. Yeah. I'm kind of conflicted because I used to have that opinion that all gambling, because I don't like smoking cigarettes, alcohol, I don't like vices, and promoting it, I think is a moral gray line. Let's be real. Any type of promoting gambling, even if you fully believe in the product and you use it, I think there is a moral gray line, especially if you have a kid audience, which I can almost guarantee you don't. Under 18, you probably don't.
No.
But I think that's more of a personal ethics line.
Yes.
Gambling specifically.
Uh-huh.
Because you can get addicted. Yeah. It's a little dangerous.
Yeah, it's an interesting play, but I agree. I think it's the way that you do your marketing and do your promotion.
DraftKings and all this. We reached out to DraftKings because I might do a gambling sponsor. This is why I was like slightly conflicted, because I just want to make sure that I'm able to use disclaimers and I don't promote it as like guaranteed way to make money, because I'm thinking of doing a March Madness video for March, April time. I think we have a pretty good idea for that. And we would love to get a casino because, these new like daily fantasies are pretty cool as well.
Yes.
I think they're pretty cool apps. It's peer-to-peer, to my knowledge. There's nothing unethical about the business. Like, it's a gambling app. They're not stealing your money.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just big companies that, if you want to gamble, and let's be real, gambling is multi-billion dollar industry now, maybe even trillion dollar. Yeah, I mean, the last couple of years has been wild seeing all these companies pop up. So the demand's there. If I believe one is better than the other, then go use that app.
Yeah, fair. No, it makes sense. Yeah, I agree. I think the whole big question is that like gray area moral line where you stand on it. But yeah, no, just curious on your opinion on that. But
well, there's different ways to promote it too. There's the ways when it's like, okay, use this code and now log in.
Which we've never done that.
Yeah. Which is like,
we don't have a deposit code. You're
directly trying to get users onto an app.
Got it.
Which I think Steve Will Do It got into a little trouble with that one from CoffeeZilla probably.
Well, the whole when thing he was
kind of, it was like his commission was based on the signups.
Oh yes, and losses.
And losses.
Yeah,
that's tough.
So we got to add that in too. That's probably a line I wouldn't cross. And some big brands, they're just trying to get attention. Mm-hmm. And I'm more comfortable with that. Mm-hmm. Versus, I don't drink Coca-Cola, but if they wanted to promote on my channel, I wouldn't feel bad.
Yeah, like, of
it's
course.
Coca-Cola.
Yeah,
you know, you know what you're getting. I'm not getting a Coke. You know, if someone gets diabetes, you get 25% boost. No. It's like you get a bonus for the bonus.
For each person that gets diabetes.
Yeah, because they drink more Coca-Cola. That'd be awful.
You'd be a really rich man, though.
Yeah, I was trying to think of the equivalent of like what. Yeah, that's a pretty clear line. I wouldn't promote gambling if that were the case.
It's like, absolutely. Here's your January check. You made $100,000. That means your audience lost $100,000. Like,
right.
Or yeah, it's kind of crazy.
More,
right?
It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, because you're just getting a percentage.
Yeah. We're going to do some rapid fire finish.
Yeah. We'll fire it up.
We've got our famous question for you. We'll go absolutely. One each.
Yeah.
Money or fame?
Fame.
Nice.
Yeah, because money easy to follow.
Okay.
Because is the question you only have one? You can only have one?
Yeah.
Ooh, okay. Is it fame is easy because then you could get
the
money pretty easily.
Yeah, but with money, can you get the fame?
I also think with fame, you can get certain experiences that money can't buy. So that's why I lean towards fame.
Okay.
I think there's certain podcasts or certain people I've had luxury of having experiences that I never could have imagined, one being FaceTime with Floyd Mayweather.
Yep.
I was broke as hell at the time. So that's an example of, that to me matters more than a few dollars in the bank account. So that's why I tend to go towards, I think you get access to experiences that only you can get access to.
Okay. Real estate or content creation?
Content creation in 2024. It's a better play.
You're bullish on the content, eh?
Very.
Okay.
What is the most popular scam out there right now?
I think crypto altcoins.
Okay.
Yeah, because that market is so massive.
I saw the priest.
Yeah.
The priest video was
funny. Was that?
It was so good.
God, wait, hold on. People actually believe this guy on his Zoom call? I was dying.
$3 million. Yeah, I think crypto altcoins. I'll stay away from Bitcoin and Ethereum, but yeah, the crypto altcoins.
Okay. Okay. What's the most money you've made off YouTube in a month?
$60,000.
Nice.
Yeah, AdSense was a hair under $60,000.
Cool. Okay.
Fuck yeah, baby. Bitcoin or traditional stocks? I know what you're going to say now.
Traditional stocks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like you're not crypto.
Anything financial though, like the way my brain works is there's like 36 follow-up questions, so I'll refrain.
True.
Okay. Like some people, if you're young and you want to get rich, man, crypto. Go either go broke or go rich.
That's it.
Stocks are free when you're older.
Okay. Biggest challenge you faced while exposing a scam?
Of course, the lawsuit.
Yeah.
It's been the biggest challenge. But to add, since we've already talked about that, I think a few videos might take a little longer than normal. Like, I don't know, one video I went out to LA and it had been a year that I've been working on a video.
Wow.
This like crypto guy, this Italian crypto actor, fake actor. So that's just the effort alone. Like you're kind of aware of the story for a year until you can finally benefit by making the video. So I would say the timeline.
Okay.
That guy's giving Italians a bad name.
Yeah, don't put us, come on.
Enzo Zalucci.
Come on, Enzo, bro. What the fuck? Would you rather catch a scammer red-handed on camera or uncover their entire operation behind the scenes?
On camera. That's explosive.
We love
reviews.
That. Yeah. We love that.
Yeah.
The Mr. Organic video. You know, the most difficult is the Mr. Organic one.
Okay.
I did this video. He's a big, tall gentleman, about 6'6", very intimidating. Has a video on public of him beating someone up. And I mean, very, very, very different background than mine.
Yeah.
And I created a fake. We were beefing publicly. He called me racist. He's a pretty big YouTuber and Instagram guy. He called me racist. And because I made a video, he was promoting gambling. I talked about him in a little bit.
Okay.
And I basically said he'd promote anything because he started promoting things in such a way that I didn't care for, and crypto, this like little BS crypto coin.
Yeah,
so my theory was that he would promote anything. So what do? I created a fake crypto coin.
Yeah.
And I ended up confronting him in person. I was a fake person. Like I was just this guy named Jimmy.
Oh my God.
So I pulled up to him in LA, and I had it all on camera. So that was a big video.
Oh my God.
That was the most difficult because so many variables had to work in my favor. I had to get him. I had a buddy call him, convince him that I had to ask for his rate, $20,000 a video. So I was like, yep, I'll pay that. And then I had the logistics work out. I pretended to live in LA. So I made the drive to LA hoping that things would work in my favor. A buddy's security guard, personal security guard, come with me. Wow. I didn't know how he'd react. I found out he had a gun on him at the time. So like,
oh my God.
Didn't tell my mom that. See, I pulled up on him in public.
Wow.
As we were publicly kind of going back and forth with each other.
Oh, you're so fucking ballsy, man.
Yeah, so that was a fun video.
Okay.
He was nothing but respectful.
Yeah.
He was nothing but gracious. It was a great experience. And okay. He was totally cool. Reacted differently than I expected or worried about.
Yeah.
But that was a month-long video that I was worrying every day. Like, I got to go out there and confront this guy.
Damn.
I got to watch. I didn't see that one.
Yeah, I said some prayers, bro.
It was good.
Okay. 10,000 YouTube subs?
No, 10 million.
10 million YouTube subs or $10 million?
10 million YouTube subs.
Yeah.
You make it back.
Yeah, well, I was gonna contradict myself if I went with the money. So I was like, man,
you just said fame, though.
Yeah, I just said fame, so I can't counter myself. That's so tough. There's like so many variables to that. Yeah, let's go with 10 million YouTube subs. Okay. Assuming you're still relevant. There's like an assumption. Assuming you're still relevant.
All real followers, all real subs.
Yep.
Most bizarre scam you've ever encountered.
Oh, man. I don't have a good answer for you.
Okay.
I wish I did. Off the top of my head.
We can keep going.
Okay, if you could collaborate with any celebrity or influencer to expose a scam, who would it be?
CoffeeZilla would be the easy answer.
Uh-huh.
I think to not give the easy answer, there's like Scammer Payback, these guys that uncover the Indian call center guys. I really respect how much effort they put in.
Those guys are hilarious. Oh, I love these guys.
Yeah, so yeah,
they fuck with them so much,
right?
Yeah, dude.
Right. So that'd be cool. I'm actually going to reach out to them soon. I really want to do a behind the scenes video of how they operate and how their operation works. So I think that'd be a really cool video.
They're killing it.
They're really big channels.
They're doing God's work.
I would love to see you do that.
Yeah,
because they are hilarious. Right. They're the funniest guys.
Kit Boga, Scammer Payback, guys like that would be really good.
Okay.
Maybe to throw you a wild card. There's some of those guys who go after the children predators.
Oh, that's new. Like that's more new, right?
Yeah. They have like this. They have the ability to go confront, which I was like, I kind of respect that. Yeah. So maybe add an extra dynamic of having that guy, me and him, go confront someone in person.
Okay.
They're doing God's work. That's for sure.
Yeah, I'll give. They do a lot better like of the God's work than I do for sure.
Sure.
Because they're uncovering real bad actors.
No, that's like really
some street jail time for those guys. Yeah. Bro. Would you rather have the power to shut down one major scam industry forever, or expose every minor scam in existence?
I'll go minor scam because I think the minor scams impact people a lot worse.
True.
I get a lot of DMs. I feel so bad. They're like, we got scammed by this little thing. It's not enough for a video. I can't dedicate a video to it. But I can tell that it was their last $1,500.
Yeah. That's who's usually getting scammed, though.
Right. Yeah. And they have no voice to publicize it. The police don't care. No one cares about a $1,500 loss.
Unfortunately.
But to that person, they do because that might be their rent money for the next month.
Yeah.
And so those little small scale scams, I think, affect people a lot worse.
100%.
Solid answer.
And the final one, which social media platform do you think is most vulnerable to scams?
Instagram.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot more personal, a lot more connection. And because it's so easy in the DMs to have someone run your... I heard about a scam in the music industry that happened years ago. It's called Tag an Artist.
Okay.
And these popular artists would people would tag an artist in the DMs of, excuse me, not the DMs, they were commenting on a post about like which is the new up and coming artist that really wants to make it. The real account, this is The Game was a part of it. Some of these really big rappers would see the comments and then they'd DM that person saying, hey, you want to get on a mixtape I'm on? If you're a new rapper, of course.
Yeah.
You pay $500, $750, $1,000, you get on a mixtape with one of these big rappers. It's an easy decision. Yeah. Well, it was a manager running this through their account. So it was the real account, but the manager was running it. And the mixtape was 75 songs.
Oh, my God.
It was something like 7 mixtapes with 75 songs each. No one listened to it because... So you're one of 200 artists on the mixtape. Of course, it doesn't have the same appeal. Oh, they all paid $500. And it was called Tag an Artist Scam.
The manager was pocketing it?
Yeah.
Wow.
Interesting.
That was pretty dirty.
Okay.
So, but Instagram, anyway, point being, you can't quite do that quite the same on YouTube. You can promote wide scale on YouTube, but Instagram has that personal feel. It's more of a personal touch.
Yeah.
Well, you bringing up that whole Instagram and then the tag an artist thing, I think it's actually interesting. There's you're on a podcast, Digital Social Hour, with Sean Mike Kelly, And I should start off by saying this. Nothing against the guy. I don't really know him. He's actually reached out, said he's a fan of the pod, you know, seen what he's been doing. And we have another friend out of New York, Goob. His IG is Goob_U2, I believe.
I'm familiar.
And yeah. Oh, so you know Goob. Yeah,
he
dude.
He exposes. Yeah.
He's a great friend of ours. He's a fucking solid guy. And recently,
I have a bone to pick with him. But
do you? Yeah, okay, yeah. This is the place to do it because he watches everything. So you could pick a bone with him in a second. So he did a video on Sean Mike Kelly, okay, and the Digital Social Hour and what's going on there. And essentially, what he said was, you know, all of his followers are fake. He pointed out moments in time that he, you know, was purchasing 1 million followers a day on Instagram. And then also, you know, was alluding to the fact that a lot of his view counts on, let's say, YouTube and his podcast are also fake. You know, comments didn't add up with the amount of likes and views and all these different things. So he's pointing it all out. And then he had a lot of people reaching out to him saying, hey, so weird, this guy hit me up in the DMs and, you know, offered for me to come on his podcast and then was charging me to do it. Some people said, you know, that they paid and the episode hasn't gone out for 3-4 months. So pretty interesting. And actually we had people personally that we know, cause he's doing this thing where he's reaching out to all our guests and saying, hey, come on my podcast, and then trying to charge them after. So, you know, Goob's whole thing was like, hey, You're charging people to come on your podcast is fine. That's a pretty normal practice. But when your view counts and things are all fake, it's pretty unethical to do that.
Yeah, right? That's fair criticism.
Yeah. So, I mean, you were on his podcast. I don't know. Like,
I didn't pay.
Yeah,
no,
definitely not.
I don't know imagine him that well. I've hung out with him a couple times. Uh-huh. Since I'm in Vegas, I was one of the first ones he reached out to. So cool. That's why his background is different.
Yes.
I was probably one of the first batch of 50. Because most new podcasts like that, you rack up 50. So then you can send them out one a week, yep, as you accumulate new guests. Yeah. So yeah, it's unfortunate when that stuff gets exposed. Because I was like, man, now I've been a guest on his podcast. I hope people don't think I paid.
Yeah.
I certainly didn't.
No, I didn't imagine you did.
Those legal fees.
It's a very fair criticism. I think as long as you aren't promoting reach, if part of the 6K, I always view a handshake agreement or a contractual agreement, like what is promised. Because if you're just paying to be on a podcast and that is content that you can use, I don't see anything wrong with fake numbers or whatever, because you weren't promised a certain reach. But if you promise, hey, I have an Instagram of this many million, you have the opportunity to be seen by million or be seen. Yeah. Now we're starting to get into, I think, pretty unethical
tactics. But you don't think that that's kind of like unspoken? Like, for example, if we have 100,000 subs and our episodes will average between 5 to maybe 15K views and then whatever the downloads are, you know, if you're looking at his and you're saying, hey, you know, and we try to charge somebody, well, they're going to look at our view counts before they come on. They're going to say, hey, okay, they're getting between 5 and 15, you know, this many followers, their clips do this, da, da, da. Like, people are kind of using those metrics to make the decision.
Right, so to evaluate the price.
Correct. So it's not necessary. Like, I hear what you're saying. He's not coming out and saying, you're guaranteed this many views. However,
by the way, I think it's very fair criticism.
Yeah.
And I'm on your side on this one. Uh-huh. Yeah, I would think that the people would be basing that decision based on the view counts. And if the view counts were purchased, but I'd also argue, like, is he paying to spread? Is he paying, like, who's paying for the reach? Because on Instagram, there's not really, I mean, I think there's fake views. So if he's doing that, that's like totally unethical and probably should be punished in some way. But if he's then using the 6K to then pay, it's not completely organic, but he's paying for reach, which you can do on Instagram.
Sure.
And it's getting to some number that's fair. Like, I don't see anything wrong with that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a fair point. I hate, like, personally, I hate like the fake like followers. Like, I hate that stuff. Like, that was really annoying.
Well, the average person won't be able to tell.
Right.
Right. Like, well, the thing is, we look like, and dude, he has some massive guests, and we're looking and saying, like,
to be fair, he's very connected. He throws events here,
yes,
and they are attended by a lot of people, a lot of people. He attracts a lot of successful business.
Yeah, yeah, and that's why I'm saying, like, I have no beef towards the guy. Like, again, never met him personally. He's reached out to us and said, you know, fan, whatever, follows on social media and vice versa. So I'd love to meet him. I'm just looking. I'm saying, fuck, those are some big guests. So like, they also must as well be looking at the view counts and saying, oh, okay, yeah, I'm so-and-so, I'm this big, but yeah, it makes sense for me to go there because, like, look at the reach. But then if the reach isn't really real, it's a whole different story.
I agree. I don't think that's a fair handshake or a fair contract.
But Goob, what's your bone to pick with Goob? By the way, Goob, love you, dude.
I should add that I really appreciate anyone doing exposed content, because you do have to put yourself out there and you risk public backlash in some capacity. And what he's done in the fitness space, I think, is needed. And I think that you could argue in some ways that's just as damaging as financial scams is body image and body health, which I think is a serious issue. So I very much appreciate all that. There's just one video. He went after Pace Morby, who I'm friends with, who I think is actually one of the most ethical people in the real estate space.
Okay.
He's an educator. He charges a lot for his course, has probably one of the best communities built on social media. Someone I found when he was really small, like 400 subscribers on YouTube. And I'm like, that guy's a star. I even did it in a video, top 10 real estate investors to follow. I was like, this guy's going to be a star.
Really?
Called him before anyone else did. And I had the pleasure of speaking at one of his events recently. He invited me up to Montana, all expense paid for everyone there.
I saw that. Yeah,
it was a great experience. Pace is, I can tell you, one of the best people in the world I've ever met. Uh-huh. Connects everyone, social. He's just amazing.
Yeah.
And does so much for others that it's like hard to put into words. Just one of the, I'm sure you guys have friends like that. Where you're like, course. I will literally vouch for this guy.
No matter
and,
what.
And when I saw that video made about him, I felt like Goob, from his perspective, I tried to understand his perspective. I can understand why he made the video, but I felt like he left a lot out. I also spoke with Pace about it. I texted him like, hey, I saw that. I was disappointed to see that because I know there were some things taken out of context. Pace then notified me of many things that he left out of the video that I believe were important details that I think changes the entire story. And that's where I think it crosses an ethical line as an exposed channel. If, let's say, I reached out to John Shahidi, I'm thinking of making an elk video. He shares with me some details that are important to share, that why the MetaCard isn't a scam or why there's certain things working. And I then make a video and don't include that.
True.
Mm-hmm.
You're kind of leaving out you're telling a narrative. And I felt like that was one example. Again, this is not, he does not do this from my perspective. It doesn't appear that he does this often. Uh-huh. It was like this one attack at Pace.
Uh-huh.
He also didn't include that this, do you know the video I'm referring to?
No, I never seen the video. Okay. Yeah. I was actually going to ask you like what actually was said in the video. Roughly.
The video was, Pace was filming. He films everything because he's very, he's an educator. He does so much real estate and so many deals. He educates. That's what he does. And he went and was evicting a tenant and got it on camera. To my knowledge, he didn't get the subject on camera. I don't believe we got her face.
Okay.
No one would know who she is. It looks awful, right? Oh my God, you're filming someone get evicted. You're an awful real estate investor. It goes back to where we are in the wave. People hate real estate investors right now. You're awful. You're kicking her out of her house. He kind of left out the detail that she was there for 37 years for free. Wow. He didn't want to include that, which I thought was like, that's kind of an important detail here. Yeah. He also, this is between Pace and Goob. But what Pace shared with me is that there's other details that if I shared them, then you go, okay, you kind of should have included those details in your exposed content.
Mm-hmm.
I think everyone would go, this video didn't need to be made. There's not really anything here.
Did they speak before the video went out?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think he made the video. And again, I totally understand his perspective, because you have a real estate investor putting on video, evicting someone. That's awful. I understand the people's perspective that you can't afford a house. You're watching someone literally evict someone and you're upset at that real estate, that evil landlord.
Yeah.
But there was way more to the story. And again, he does good. I appreciate what he does. I just felt like that one instance.
Yeah,
I get very defensive about this because I know the power we all have as channels that expose.
Yes.
And I think there's an ethical line that I hope we don't cross. And when I do see people cross it, again, this goes back to when people were making videos on me. And I know what it's like to feel that when you see people come at you and you see comments online, everyone's opinion of you is you have no reputation, no credibility, and they're wrong about everything.
Yeah,
it really bothers me.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. It makes sense. I think I have to watch the video now because I haven't seen it. But if I had to defend Goob, because I just love him, he's just my guy. I love you, bro. Maybe he just didn't have enough time in the video to give all the things. You know what I mean? Sure. Maybe.
Goob,
I'm saying
we got
maybe.
You, Goob.
Honestly, great dude. And I mean, hey, look, at the end of the day, in any profession, you're not gonna hit 100% every time. You know what I mean? So that, I mean, and that goes with everything. Dude, Spencer, first and foremost, thank you so much for coming on and doing this.
Thank you, bro.
It's been funny, and I'm honestly so happy to have you here because you've gone after so many of our guests who now when I go back, and I'm not like mad that we did those, but I'm more like, fuck, like you've actually pushed us to do more research on the person prior to doing the interviews.
I'll defend you guys. There's very little you can do. It's, if someone asked me about Wi-Fi money a year ago, after I watched your guys' podcast, I was like, oh wow, these guys are pretty legit. I wouldn't know either. It's only until people reach out to me there's no way of, it goes back to the FTX thing. There's just certain things you can't have access to.
No, we find it funny. Like, I love it. Like, every like, you know, when the Wi-Fi money one came out, and then, you know, we laugh about it because we're like, hey, good. Like, if that's happening and that currently happened, hey, go for it. We just always laugh about it. It's hilarious. We're like, me and us sit back and we're like, fuck, we should have done more research. You know, so you, again, could we have uncovered things? Maybe not.
Hey, maybe you just become my inside source. You guys
no, no, but
we're the incubator for you, eh? We just get them in.
Yeah, and you befriend them, and then after the party, you're like, hey, let me see your bank account, or let me see this. You take a screenshot or something.
No, but so I appreciate it because you've actually pushed us to, you know, do more research on people before we have them on show. So yeah. I really appreciate that. And again, thank you for coming out and making the time to do this.
Yeah, you guys have one final question.
Yeah.
You know that.
Of course. See, he already knows. So, all right, listen, Spence, we got to ask you, bro. Do you believe money buys happiness?
I've gotten to think about this quite a while. Okay. So there's three different tiers in society, I believe. And okay. I think all these socioeconomic tiers can be determined by what problems or what are your problems. And so I think money buys happiness for the people. I would estimate 97 to 99% of people who are currently in the position where money solves every one of your problems. And so the answer is definitively, yes, mm-hmm. money does buy happiness. It's only when you elevate out of that tier where then you get into the tier, a lot of guests, a lot of people have a platform, does money buy happiness? Like, oh, you know, they give you some nuanced answer. Well, it's because they've elevated out. An additional dollar won't help them out.
Yes.
Does money buy happiness? Absolutely. It's mm-hmm. also a temporary emotion. And so theoretically, yes, I believe it does buy happiness, but that it's all temporary.
Damn.
It's just like, does a movie make you fearful? Well, yeah, in the hour and a half you're watching The Ring back when I was a kid. Yeah, for an hour and a half I had fear.
I was scared for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, okay, a couple of weeks, right? But it's a temporary emotion.
No, it's true.
Same thing with happiness.
True. You're right. Yeah, and I think I have to agree with that stance. I think you just put it, you articulate it much better than I do. But yeah, for a lot of fucking people on this earth, yes, money would buy them happiness because it would get them out of really shitty situations that they're currently in. But yeah, 100%. Once you get to 100 million, 150 million, it's like...
Well, the problem is the people generally who have the cameras in front of them before YouTube, it was the celebrities, it was the actors, the professional athletes, the people that have made 50 million and have all the things. Does money buy happiness? Like, you know, you should... You know, Jim Carrey's quote is really good. It's like, you should become famous and rich to see that that's not the answer. Well, yeah, when you are rich and famous, that's your current problems can't be solved by rich becoming more rich and more famous. Yep. But if you have 1,000 subscribers on YouTube, I can guarantee that person will be happier if they have 1 million subs and $1 million in the bank account.
Absolutely.
But then when you get there, it's then about legacy and building a team and doing right by your friends and family.
Yes.
So then it changes.
I think most of the people that said, no, it doesn't buy happiness were rich as fuck.
Right.
Yeah.
Because or, then they're or in a position they're, where an additional dollar doesn't, their problems are bigger than an additional dollar.
Of course.
Or it's just the easy answer when you want to seem like philosophical and you know, grateful for the earth that we live on the ground. Dude, it's fucking 2024. We live in the Western society where money matters. It just is what it is. We all got to just.
It matters most.
Yeah, exactly.
It literally solves every problem. Yeah, if you have a health problem, enough money can almost always solve it. If you want to buy a house, enough money will solve that problem.
Correct.
If you're in a lawsuit.
Enough money will solve that problem.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. Spencer, man, appreciate it, bro. Yes, thank you so much for doing this. Guys, we made it this far, and I hope you did, because this was an unreal conversation.
Don't say what you're going to say. Don't say it.
If you made it this far, thank you. All right. We're closing it up. We appreciate it.
We love you.
Yes.
Thank you.
But guess what? You guys told me the next guest you'll have is the biggest one yet. So if they want to check him out, make sure to check out the channel by hitting that little red button.
See?
There
you go. See?
He said it, not me.
It wasn't him. It wasn't us. All right. And that, Jay?